doing a decent lineup.
House Judiciary will come to order. Will the Secretary please take roll?
Vice Chair Lear?
Here.
Vice Chair Bishop?
Here.
Representative Mitchell?
Excused.
Representative Sheldon Galloway?
Excused.
Representative Smith?
Excused.
Representative Deming?
Here.
Representative Knudsen?
Excused.
Representative France?
Here.
Representative Carlson?
Excused.
Representative Howell?
Here.
Representative Durham?
Here.
Representative Hawk?
Excused.
Representative Zephyr?
Excused.
Representative Kmetz?
Here.
Representative Etchart?
Here.
Representative Jay Hinkle?
Here.
Representative Russ?
Here.
Representative C. Hinkle?
Here.
Sorry. Minority Leader Abbott?
Excused.
Chair Regeer?
Here.
Members of the committee, we will hear House Bill 423. Your representative, would you like to open on your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I am Amy Regeer, and I represent House District 6. Today, I have for your consideration House Bill 423. 423 is a cleanup bill from House Bill 92 that was passed last session. The original bill provided a mechanism for those in the Montana justice system who have been wrongfully convicted to seek remedy. A wrongful conviction, depending on how far into the justice system exoneree may be, the inconvenience of missed job opportunities, housing, and educational opportunities present themselves. House Bill 92 sought to make a wrongful conviction right and was the product of much deliberation as well as an amendatory veto from the governor. Since its implementation 2 years ago, one individual has been able to use the provision. However, it has highlighted a few areas that we need to address. The original bill requires that through civil proceeding, or through civil proceeding that would certify that a criminal court has found a claimant is innocent before awarding appropriate compensation. This process was never intended to require or allow for the repeat adjudication of a finding of innocence already made by the criminal courts. Walking through the bill, Section 1AII intends to address the issue by clarifying that a requirement of a proffer of innocence is not required if the charges have been dismissed or the claimant has been found not guilty. Then further down in Section 1, subsection 4, seeks to clarify the intent when the $5,000 transition assistance is paid. Currently, as the law is written, the grant would be issued within 30 days of the release from prison. The intent of the 30 days was to deliver the grant in a timely fashion. However, it has the effect of precluding individuals who have been released years ago. As an example, the individual who has been able to benefit from this law was released in 2016 and denied the grant funding because of the phrasing within 30 days of the claimant's release from imprisonment. Further down, Section 2, Subsection 5C, II, the striking of this language is intended to give the authority to the courts for establishing innocence. And then Section 3, Subsection 3 addresses the issue of who should be paying for the wrongful conviction. The struck section was added through the amendatory veto by the governor, keeping the cost with the responsible party, some state, most county. And there is a piece that MACO is here to address an amendment that they have that they would like to see added into this section as well. And I'll let them explain that. And then probably lastly and most importantly, Section 8 removes the sunset date and creates a new effective date of July 1st. With that, I will let those that understand this issue intimately explain more.
Thank you. We will now open it up to proponents for House Bill 423. Proponents in the room.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Amy Sings in the Timber. That's SINGSINTHETIMBER. I am here today on behalf of the Montana Innocence Project in support of House Bill 423. The Montana Innocence Project thanks Representatives Regeer and Lair and Senator Usher for bringing forward this important bill for consideration. We want to thank as well the Law and Justice Interim Committee and other concerned stakeholders, including the Governor's Office and the County Attorneys Association, for their diligent work in monitoring the process under House Bill 92 and working to make the necessary and appropriate adjustments to ensure that the intent of the bill is realized and that justice is actually served. Representative Regeer has provided you a very thorough overview of House Bill 423, so I will simply highlight just a few of the following items. The bill clarifies the transitional assistance, as mentioned. Regardless of that date, I will allow MACO folks to go into some more detail on the specifics of the date amendments as well. It also removes the additional burden to include and certify a proffer of innocence in such cases where the charges against the claimant have been dismissed or upon retrial the claimant has been found not guilty. These are exactly the reasons why somebody would be coming forward to make a claim under this particular legislation. It also removes the county of conviction as a party to the action and eliminates that cost-sharing mechanism. And I'm happy to answer any questions about that particular amendment as well. These notable changes are designed to address many of the significant barriers that have been experienced by our client currently undergoing the process and will serve to provide meaningful relief to future applicants as intended by the law. Thank you for your time and consideration. MTIP urges that you pass, and I'll stand ready to answer any questions the committee might have.
Further proponents in the room?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Karen Alley, A-L-L-E-Y. I'm Associate General Counsel for the Montana Association of Counties. And MACO rises in support of this bill as a good cleanup and clarification of the process with regards to wrongful incarceration. There was mention of an amendment that MACO is seeking to add into this bill, which is to define the date of exoneration and really just put that date into statute, which is then a trigger point for future action under this statute. And so we have worked with the sponsor as well as other stakeholders with this, and I don't believe there'll be any resistance to adding, like I said, language that relates directly to what the date of exoneration actually means, so that moving forward there's an actual place in statute that we can point to that says this is a trigger point for future actions. So with that, with our amendment, we would request a due pass on this bill. So thank you.
Thank you. Any further proponents in the room?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Senator Barry Usher, USHER. This bill came in our interim committee where I was chair in 2019-2020. We did 2 years of good work. Evidently, we're not perfect because the bill that we ran last session had some, I guess, roadblocks, and we had one person go through the process, and we learned a lot through that process. So this, with all the stakeholders, to try and get rid of some of those roadblocks so it could be used appropriately and as the intent is, we would like to do pass on this, and I think it's the right thing to do. Thank you.
Further proponents in the room? Further proponents? Seeing none and seeing none online, or is there any opponents in the room? Any opponents?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Robert Filipovich, F-I-L-I-P-O-V-I-C-H. I live in Helena representing myself, and I am, I would say, a devil's advocate opponent in this case. After working with inmates in three of Montana's public prisons for 25 years and recognizing that some of them were in fact innocent, or certainly appeared to be to me, I'm approaching this as an opponent from what I believe to be their perspective. And part of my devil's advocacy here is that I, like those few that are innocent, frankly have a difficult time understanding this thing. Starting at the very beginning on page 1, line 5, making the compensation process permanent. It's not clear to me whether that means that section 103 and 106 of the pertinent laws here would become permanent, so I suggest you probe that. I am concerned with, further down in line 8, this matter of removing a pardon, either by the parole board or by the governor. My concern is that, I'll tell you what, I'll explain that when I get to the money part of this. And I'm also concerned that it takes the district court that convicted the person in the first place is out of the process. It's difficult to admit one's mistakes. And frankly, any prisoner coming out or still in prison recognizes the tremendous power that the system has. Ask yourself, when's the last time an actual convict or ex-convict came here to address this committee? It's frankly frightening. As a teacher, I would occasionally have ex-students of mine come to me, but they were even afraid of me. So think how afraid they would be to come and talk about this process from their perspective, particularly when it would go back to the district court that convicted them in the first place. And I recognize, on the other hand, as one of the proponents said, that there are some balances in that decision. Now, I'm not clear on what is meant by eligibility. Eligibility is 46-32-103, and it says to be eligible to receive relief. By the way, 103 is not found in the bill. To be eligible to receive relief under 42-32-102, claimant must file affirmatively waive any and all remedies, relief, and compensation against the state, political subdivision, and pretty much everybody else. Prior to the payment of any damages or compensation, I'm perfectly willing to be wrong here, but as I read that, the claimant, in order to be eligible, has to give up any shot at making a correction anywhere else on the planet in order to go ahead with the case that and procedure that's presented in this bill. And another aspect of this is whether 106 would be permanent. The number is 46-32-106, which is not which is in the bill, would give the claimant, if he won, $60,000 a year for every year of imprisonment, $25,000 a year if he's been on parole or probation, and would also be entitled to receive up to $25,000 of actual incurred costs to carry out the case. That would, incidentally, as you read the bill, include an appeal to the Supreme Court. So what I would ask is that someone take us through the actual process. The claimant is eligible, is, that's not the right word. The claimant makes a presentation, a proffer, I guess is the word, to claim his innocence, and then the process starts, and then if he, she wins, then presumably this money would flow as we see in 106, plus some other monies for the $5,000 up front and the housing voucher. But please take us through that actual process, because an inmate coming out of prison has maybe.
We have a lot of other testimony. If you can, we've given you 5 minutes. If you could wrap up your testimony,
sure.
Please.
A prisoner coming out maybe has $200. And if he's going to make claims, he's going to need an attorney. So take us through how that money would flow. In other words, how this process could actually work in the real world. I hope that you'll be able to look at this as a realistic solution, which goes about as far, I hope, as anyone can reasonably go and balance the interests. And I'll be available here for any questions you might have. Thanks.
Thank you. Any further opponents in the room? Opponents in the room? Seeing none and none online. Any informational witnesses in the room? Seeing none online, we have Fred Valkenburg.
Mr. Chairman, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Thank you. I'm Fred Van Valkenburg. I'm appearing in my capacity as a former legislator, 20 years in the Montana Senate, and the former Missoula County Attorney from 1998 to 2014. It would appear that this bill, House Bill 423, is somehow connected to a pending lawsuit in Missoula County entitled Cody Marble versus the State of Montana and Missoula County. I say that because I think that this case is the only case of the type referenced in the current statute, 4632-104 MCA, filed since the statute was adopted in the last session of the legislature. And in addition, one proposed provision in this bill eliminating the requirement in current law to submit a proffer of actual innocence in cases involving the dismissal of charges could substantially benefit the plaintiff. To begin, I was the Missoula County attorney when Mr. Marble was convicted in 2002.
Mr. Valkenburg, are you as an informational witness, we'd just like to ask you to state your name and who you represent, and if the committee has questions, we'll ask them. But if you are a proponent or an opponent, if you would state that, and then you can give your testimony.
I am not a proponent or an opponent. I consider myself solely an informational witness. I'm Fred Van Valkenburg. I'm the former Missoula County attorney. I also served in the legislature for 20 years.
Thank you. Seeing no other informational witnesses, do we have questions from the committee? Representative Kmetz.
Mr. Chair, could I ask Senator Usher a question?
Senator Usher.
Mr. Chair, Representative.
Senator Usher, I'm trying to get my head around this a little bit. Is the purpose of this bill to limit to restrict the payouts to someone that has been found innocent to a finite figure versus an infinite figure that if it could go to court where they could claim millions and millions of dollars? Does this bill just restrict the payments to someone found innocent?
Mr. Chair, representatives, to some extent, this basically is a shortcut for those persons that they want to put this behind them, go the easy. This is the easier route, which is a finite number. Whereas if they did go for a lawsuit, it could take years and years and years, and they may or may not win. So, in that respect, I would say yes.
Okay. One follow-up?
Follow-up.
Senator Usher, so if a person is found innocent, would they have two options? Could they take the payout prescribed here, or could they pursue a lawsuit for an infinite figure?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I believe we put in the bill that if they take this choice, they cannot take the lawsuit route.
Thank you.
Any further questions from the committee? Representative Franz.
Yeah, I just have a question for Mr. Van Valkenburg. I'm wondering if he thinks this cleanup accomplishes what our intent here to provide two ways to make whole or try to make whole someone who's wrongfully convicted. So I'd welcome any thoughts you have on the bill, Mr. Van Valkenburg.
Mr. Van Valkenburg.
Thank you, Representative France, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I find it difficult to understand how this is just a cleanup bill. This elimination of the requirement to submit a proffer with regards to dismissed cases is a very substantive change in the bill. In addition, taking county governments completely out of any financial responsibility in this bill is a huge change. I think it was one of the big reasons that the governor vetoed the bill last session was to put that in there so that both the state and the county would have some interest in defending the lawsuit involved. So in that regard, I don't think this is a cleanup bill in that respect.
Thank you.
Are there any further questions from the committee? Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chair, I would like to ask Senator Usher a question.
Senator Usher.
Mr. Chair, Representative.
Senator Usher, Mr. Chair, can you address the notion of the counties getting off the hook, basically, by that amendment to this bill?
So, Mr. Chair, Representative, so I'll do the best I can. If I don't succeed, I do have Mako here. But so last session, it was vetoed by the governor, and the governor wanted that in there. Over this interim, there's been discussions with all the stakeholders, and including the governor's office, significantly. And there was no issues, especially with the current amendment with Mako. I mean, the state, they are state crimes that the county is actually prosecuting. They are not county crimes that these people would be incarcerated for, typically. And so it was all discussed and who should have that liability. And if, for some reason, there was malice or the county attorneys or someone in that process did willfully not prosecute properly or provide evidence or I can't think of the right word, I'm thinking, withholding evidence or anything like that, that's a different lawsuit outside of this bill. There's always that opportunity, and that I think was part of the thought process of why the county should be involved. But again, that's also a separate lawsuit that would be outside this bill.
Follow up. Thank you. And then just to address another thing that came up is and you kind of just touched on it, is the person is not losing their right for recourse. It's just that if they take the monthly amount or the yearly amount provided for in this bill, then they also cannot sue for wrongful incarceration separately. It's not, they're not losing their right to sue on a negligence lawsuit or something like that, right?
Mr. Chair, Representative, that's correct.
Thank you.
Representative Smith, did you have a question?
I do. I have a question for the representative from the Innocence Project.
Mr. Chair, Representative.
I got a quick question. I was a bit confused, if I'm being honest, when I read the requirements on the first page. So it looks like, sort of reading around the amended language, that either they, prior to this proposed bill, I guess current law, they would either make a proffer establishing their actual innocence with those requirements, or the charges were dismissed, or a finding of not guilty on retrial. So that language on page two seems to be the same amended language on page one. What am I missing?
So the way that the bill came out of the Law and Justice Interim Committee, as originally presented, did not include a proffer of innocence. It spelled out these other items that you see in the bill here today. Through the process, through the sausage making, the proffer of innocence got added into House Bill 92. Mr. von Valkenburg is accurate that it is a significant change. It's actually really allows now, in this current version, for the true intent of the bill to be seen through. So right this moment, if you are somebody who's been wrongfully convicted and your case was dismissed, or you were given retrial and found not guilty upon retrial, you would not have to prove your innocence a second time.
I see what you're
The only time that you would be required to do so is if one of those two triggering events had not taken place, then you would have to go through this process in order to procure a proffer of actual innocence in order to be able to pursue this claim all the way through.
Quick follow-up.
So
that is very helpful to me in understanding that change on page one and two. Can you respond to the concerns about the revisions to the bill essentially precluding kind of a civil path for remedies? Can you describe any concerns you might have or what your thoughts are on that?
Certainly. So I will tell you, obviously, the Innocence Project has our client's best interests in mind. And that if the world were perfect, the state of Montana would allow for both a claimant to go through this process and to pursue a federal claim. However, this is not the world as the Innocence Project has designed it. This is the real world in which we need to make reasonable compromises. And this is one of those reasonable compromises. So should an individual really want to go through the process to hold a bad actor responsible for their actions, and they would need to pursue a federal claim. But the reality, too, is that not all wrongfully convicted individuals can withstand or desire to withstand the rigors of that type of trial. This would allow them a simple, straight-lined process to rebuild their lives and provide some measure of compensation for what had been taken from them, although it's never going to fully compensate them.
Mr. Chair, one follow-up. Last one. So I guess that brings up a point, and maybe the bill's details sort of outline this, but is the bill essentially, I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around the portion of the bill that essentially would require, and tell me if this is correct, that would essentially require someone who wants to pursue this path that we're looking at, so they want to pursue a state path, would they essentially have to sign some kind of agreement that they wouldn't pursue a federal remedy? And I guess that's a little bit concerning. Is that how the mechanics would work, or how do you envision the mechanics of that working?
So in the instance of our current client, they already had a federal lawsuit underway. They had to forego that federal lawsuit in order to pursue this path. In the instance of someone who had not yet started the process of making a federal claim, they would need to you know, secure counsel in order to start going through this process, because I assure you, it is complicated enough that they're not going to be able to do this pro se. And through that process, there is, you know, whether or not they're going to be required to sign something, I cannot answer. It's not accounted for in this particular bill. But the original bill had what is what we call an offset provision, which would mean if they were simultaneously pursuing those two paths and they received an award from their federal lawsuit that exceeded the amount of state compensation that they had received, that they would be required to reimburse the state for the amount of compensation that they had received up to that point. The offset provision is no longer in the bill. It was taken out in the last session in House Bill 92. It was removed. And so what it would look like now is someone would apply for and be immediately eligible for the transition assistance, the $5,000 grant. If they, for whatever reason, were not able to continue pursuing this, either the state has determined that they're not eligible for it, or they are, you know, they're in the process of this proffer business, and it's there's a determination that they're not guilty, then they would be required to pay back that transition grant. At that point, they would not have received any funds from the state in the way of compensation. The issue with that is if they're required to sign something, there may well be a constitutional challenge. And that was raised in the last session, that there are a few other states who have required such an act, signing away a right, and that is under litigation currently. There's no resolution in those states at this point. So I really couldn't speak to whether or not that's what that would look like. But
thank you.
You're opening for a challenge.
Right. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Further questions from the committee? Representative Durham.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for the bill sponsor, please.
Representative.
Mr. Chair, Representative.
Mr. Chair, Representative, thank you. Perhaps I'm reading something that's not here, but it looks to me like the real issue that's changing this is on page 3, lines 13 and 14, and page 2, lines 2 and 3, and that's that it removes a pardon as one of the conditions for this program. Is that, am I on or off base on this issue?
Can I refer this to
thank you,
Senator Usher?
Senator?
Mr. Chair, Representative, you are correct.
Thank you.
Any further questions from the committee? Seeing none, Representative, would you like to close on your bill?
Thank you, committee. The House Bill 92, there was a lot of deliberation. I can see a lot more questions that this stirs up, but there are just a few things that House Bill 423 is trying to accomplish, and I ask for a due pass.
Thank you. This will close the hearing on House Bill 423. Craig, online, could you bring in a Zoom participant called Owner so he can state who he is and so we can mark him down as a proponent or an opponent?
I don't like the idea. Mr. Chair, owner is here.
The fellow with the name, or maybe not a fellow, sorry. The person with the name owner on their Zoom, if you could take your name or take yourself off mute so we can get your name and mark you down as a proponent or an opponent.
That's an interesting question. I'm sure I voted yes.
I don't believe they are listening. Okay, members of the committee, we will now open the hearing on House Bill 372. Representative, would you like to open on your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the Judiciary Committee. I'm Representative Paul Fielder. I'm from Thompson Falls, Montana, in Sanders County, very northwestern Montana, and I also represent parts of Northwest Flathead County in the Kyler-Marion area. Today I'm bringing before you House Bill 372, which is a constitutional amendment bill aimed to strengthen the Harvest Heritage Clause of the Montana Constitution. This bill has 97 co-sponsors. It's got a lot of support from sportsmen's communities. The bill has four sentences in there, and one of the handouts that I think you've all received is a three-page handout, basically titled at the top, Why a Constitutional Right to Hunt, Fish, and Trap is Needed in Montana. So I'm going to refer to that a little bit. On the second page of this bill, basically, it states the language. The bill has three sentences, does four things. It says the citizens of Montana have the right to hunt, fish, trap, and harvest wild fish and wildlife, including the right to use current means and methods. It does not create or imply any right of public trespass on private property or diminish in any way vested private property rights. It says the state shall give preference to hunting, fishing, and trapping by citizens as the primary but not exclusive means for the state's management of fish and wildlife populations. It also says that this right is subject to the necessary management statutes enacted by the legislature and the regulatory authority delegated by the legislature to a designated public agency or commission. In this case right now, that would be the Montana Department of Fish and Wildlife and the commission of that agency. So why do we need to bring this bill? In 1990, animal rights activist Wayne Pacelle said...
Representative, we do not allow proper names in this committee.
Excuse me, sir. You're correct, Mr. An animal rights activist for an organization which is supports animal rights said, "We are going to use the ballot box and the Democrat process to stop all hunting in the United States. We will take it species by species until all hunting is stopped in California. Then we will take it state by state." Since then, sportsmen have fought ballot initiatives from animal rights activists in California, Arizona, Colorado, Oregon, Alaska, Idaho, Massachusetts, Washington, Ohio, Utah, Michigan, and Montana. On page three of this handout that I gave you is a list of the different states and the years that different ballot initiatives were brought against different things. Those ballot initiatives have attacked trapping, hunting with hounds, bear hunting, wolf hunting, cougar hunting, fox hunting, bobcat hunting, even dove hunting. So this ballot initiative that I'm bringing before you now is to try to protect all forms of sportsmen. The key words in this bill, the language in there, is in that first sentence where it says current means and methods. Management starts with M-A-N, man. you know, and man has to manage things. And we have different tools in the wildlife manager's toolbox. I'm a retired wildlife biologist, and I've used a number of tools in managing wildlife and wildlife habitat. And current means and methods basically says what's on the books now as far as our regulations stays on the books. So that stuff can't be taken away from us. We've got a constitutional amendment right now that says, constitutional amendment says that the opportunity to harvest wild fish and wild game animals is a heritage that shall be ever preserved to the individual citizens of the state. So it's an opportunity, not a right. You buy a lottery ticket, you have an opportunity to win a prize. You don't have a right to win a prize. A lot of times we talk about property rights, water rights, tribal treaty rights, gun rights. We don't talk about opportunities. So a right puts some teeth into this thing. One of the handouts that was also provided to you is a one-page letter from the MSSA, which is the Montana Shooting Sports Association. Now, this is an important email from the president of that organization. And that organization in 2004 was the organization that sponsored the present Harvest Heritage Clause in Montana. And a lot of people are going to say, we've already got protection for hunting, fishing, and harvesting wildlife in Montana. But at the bottom of that email, you'll see that Gary Marbit, the president of the Montana Shooting Sports Association, says that although they were the sponsor of it, the agency that manages fish and wildlife in this state says that it doesn't really do anything much. It only commemorates Montana's heritage to harvest wildlife. And he says the language needs to be strengthened. This is the sponsor of the original Harvest Heritage Clause in the Montana Constitution. He says the language in that clause needs to be strengthened. And he says House Bill 372 does that, and Montana Shooting Sports Association supports it. So who supports this bill? We've already said the Montana Shooting Sports Association supports it. I've got a document that I handed to the secretary earlier this morning because I just got it. The Gun Owners of America support this bill. The language for this bill was not something that we made up. It was recommended by the attorneys for the National Rifle Association when an earlier version of this bill came. It's also language which is supported by the Congressional Sportsman's Caucus, and it's a language which is used in 16 other states' right to hunt, fish, and trap constitutional amendments. So this has been very well researched. On the second page, I also have a list there in the handout that you got of all the states that have enacted similar right to hunt, fish, and trap bills. You can see when they were enacted and when they were approved in those states. It also shows the majority of the election results for those bills when they were placed on the ballot. As you can see, most of them had very high percentages of winning on the ballot, 75 to 89% in most cases. So this is a very popular bill. What we're trying to do is to get it through the legislature so it goes to the citizens on the November 2024 election, to let the citizens use the democratic process to decide whether they want to protect our current means and methods of harvesting fish and wildlife. I also want to point out that the original Harvest Heritage Clause talks about the right to harvest wild fish and wild game animals. And wild and game animals, according to the Montana Code annotated definition, includes about 11 species of big game animals. It includes deer, elk, moose, antelope, caribou, mountain sheep, mountain goat, mountain lion, bear, and wild buffalo. But what about upland game birds? What about waterfowl? What about fur bears? What about predators and non-game animals? So what this bill also does is it includes all those groups of wildlife species rather than just big game animals. So with that, that's a quick overview. It's got a lot of support from a lot of sportsmen's groups and, of course, 97 co-sponsors on the bill. I'll save that for closing, Mr. Chair. I'll sit down for proponents and opponents. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We will now open it up to proponents.
member guests that are in here, we are going to limit testimony for the proponents and opponents both to 3 minutes. So I will let you know when your time has expired if you use it all.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Bob Gilbert, G-I-L-B-E-R-T. I'm here today on behalf of Walleyes Unlimited of Montana in support of this bill. We think it's a great idea. It's something that needs to move forward. Let the citizens have their speak. Mr. Chairman, I have another meeting in about 10 minutes. I would ask that I be excused so I could attend that.
Are there any questions from the committee for Mr. Gilbert? Seeing none, Mr. Gilbert, you're excused.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further proponents in the room, and if we could have the proponents kind of maybe line up one or two deep so we can cycle through you. Thank you.
My name is Chris Killorn, K-I-L-L-O-R-N. I'm from Belgrade, Montana. Chairman and representatives, today you have before you an important part of legislation for preserving Montana's heritage. I'm a fourth-generation Montanan. I have seen many ballot initiatives come against sportsmen's or industries in this state, and it is limited usage. And this one protects your kid being able to fish in a pond, or my niece and nephews wanting to hunt the same area as I did. It preserves your private land rights, and it also helps protect the public access to legal access of for hunting and fishing. Now, Outdoor Heritage Coalition, who I am representing today, was formed after a ballot initiative, I-177, which you guys might remember, was a trapping bill to end all trapping in the state of Montana. And it was in 2016, and it was tied to public access. So that proved that your constitution, our constitution, was not strong enough to stop this. Because right now, with the current constitution, what you have is that if I have the right to hunt a mouse, they have not infringed upon my right. So this gives clarity to this. And you're going to hear a lot of opponents today saying that, well, we already have this, this protection's already in place. And you hear that all the time. But the reason why they're here today is because if this passes, they won't be able to throw the ballot initiatives at us. The I-77 cost the proponents of it about 50 some odd thousand dollars to collect 30,000 signatures.
1 minute.
And for conservation agencies to raise the funds to inform the voters was over $540,000. And you had to raise it really fast. So I ask you today, please pass a due pass. OHC has the backing to carry this to the voters and to help educate the voters. And I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Further proponents.
My name is Ed Hebby IV, Hotel Echo, Bravo, Bravo, Echo. Good morning, Chairman, members of the committee. I represent the Montana Trappers Association. I'm the communications director of that organization, and we strongly support House Bill 372 because it will strengthen sportsmen's opportunities in this state, as well as firearms owners and the like. And with that, I'll go ask for your support of this bill. Thank you.
Further proponents.
Good morning, Chair and committee members. My name is Jeff Darrah. That's D-A-R-R-A-H. I'm here today to speak for Montana Sportsmen for Fish and Wildlife as their executive director. In our mission statement, the very first sentence of the mission statement is to protect, preserve, and enhance our hunting, fishing, and trapping rights. So that's why I'm here. I'm a retired game warden. I've dedicated 30 years of my life protecting our resources in Montana, and now I'm trying to protect what we like to do, hunt, fish, and trap. You may hear today that if this bill is passed,
it will affect Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks' ability to suspend someone's privileges if they violate the law. There are 23 states right now in the United States that have a constitutional right to hunt, fish, and trap. They all belong to what is called an interstate violator compact. A violator compact is a program that is a reciprocal suspension of privileges. If you lose your privileges in Montana to hunt, fish, and trap because of a game violation, you lose it in 47 other states. So that's a falsehood if that is used today as a problem with the constitutional right. I've also researched every state that has the constitutional right to hunt, fish, and trap, and they have in statute, just like Montana does, the way to revoke somebody's privileges for a game violation. So it does not affect FWP's authority to take somebody's privileges away. If that comes up, that's not true. I would just ask that you really think about this bill and look to the West, look at California, look at Oregon, and look at Washington. With the changing demographic of Montana, people are moving here every day, and they want to affect our life in Montana. Do not let Montana become California.
1 minute.
Please support House Bill 372. Thank you for your time.
Further proponents.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Coulter Lumley, L-U-M-L-E-Y. I'm 15 years old, and over the years, I've watched my father fight countless ballot initiatives for my right to the outdoors, and now it's my turn to join the fight. I ask for a due pass for my future. Thank you.
Further proponents.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Matt Lumley, L-U-M-L-E-Y. I am the president of the Montana Trappers Association. So you'll hear today that this is a trapping bill, but it is so much more than that. So when I-177 hit in 2016, we were told that trapping was protected in the Constitution. But what wasn't protected was traditional means and methods, meaning as long as we could trap a mouse, trapping was still occurring, and therefore our constitutional rights had not been violated. Now this carries down to fishing. You could eliminate dry flies. You could have a ballot initiative in Montana tomorrow to get rid of fly fishing with 10% or 30,000 signatures. What this bill does, it does not preclude a ballot initiative, but it is going to strengthen it. It will double the threshold of signatures. That's the key. It doubles the signature threshold. That is what we are doing. And all we're asking you to do is to have the political courage to allow the voters of Montana to decide our future. I ask for a due pass. Thank you.
Further proponents.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Michael McKenrick, M-C-K-E-N-R-I-C-K, and I'm 17 years old. I am a sportsman. I enjoy going out hunting, fishing, and trapping, and I enjoy my privileges, but I would like my future kids to enjoy the rights of what I'm able to do now. I ask for a due pass. Thank you.
Further proponents.
Morning, Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Tim McKenrick, M-C-K-E-N-R-I-C-K. That was my son that just spoke. I'm going to ask you to just consider the future generations, okay? This year alone, I have taken two other families with me and a third person out just the other day and introduced them to trapping, all right? And by doing so, every one of them is excited. And as they said, this is not just a trapping bill, because the gentleman that I took with me the other day is actually involved in shooting sports very much. He didn't understand what was going on or any of the stuff that was coming down. But what I'm asking you to do is seriously consider this, put it out to the voters, let them make the decision. That's where we are supposed to go with this. Take it to them, let them make the decision on how this plays out. If the voters say no, then the voters have spoken. But if the voters say yes, then we are protected even more. Thank you very much.
Further proponents.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Lewis Taffelmeyer, T-A-F-E-L-M-E-Y-E-R. I am am a sportsman from here in town, and I would just ask you to use this opportunity to support this bill. I would ask that we would let the voters of Montana decide the future. And I have two wonderful daughters, and please consider their opportunity to do the things that we all love to do, and let them have that opportunity in the future. Thank you.
Further proponents.
Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Chris Morgan. I'm here representing the Montana Trappers Association. I live in Helena, Montana. There's much more to this bill than just trapping and predator hunting, but let's face it, that's the big focus. All these initiatives coming about are geared towards predator and trapping. If you look at California, for instance, 71 coyote attacks since October of this year. They did away with most of their predator management in the 90s, but have slowly been reducing it to the point where there's no fur allowed to be taken at all in California. Massachusetts is right there behind them. They have numerous projects going on right now that are using the USDA APHIS to remove coyotes out of neighborhoods because you cannot trap coyotes with footholds, and their season is very short for hunting. There's a lot at stake here if you really look at it. You know, Montana does things, at least in my opinion, right. We keep things open for everybody, and we'd like to keep that. So moving forward, I would hope that you pass House Bill 372, not only for myself, but for future generations, that we won't have to fight here for this. Thank you.
Mr. Morgan, could you please spell your last name for the record? Thank you.
I apologize. Thank you. Morgan.
Thank you. Further proponents.
Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Robert Shepherd, S-H-E-P-P-A-R-D, from Ovando. I was born and raised in Montana for 72 years, a hunter, a trapper, and a fisherman for over 63 years. I urge you to vote for this bill. This addresses much more than just trapping. The wording changes addresses the methods we will be allowed to use and manage to harvest fish and game in this state. And it provides protections for these methods that we previously used and now use currently. Without these changes, we could ostensibly lose many effective methods to harvest and manage the fish and game of these states. Without these changes about the current methods and tools used, we could wind up in a position where, sure, I can go fishing, but I have to use a willow stick and a string. I currently go to Indiana every year for a branch of Purdue University on wildlife issues. I'm an instructor there, primarily wolves. Many of the students come from various state fish and game agencies. One such state is Colorado. Colorado does not have these safeguards in their constitution. Colorado is now currently introducing wolves. Under present day Colorado laws, when those wolves are introduced, there will be no methods, according to the Colorado Constitution, that will allow them to manage or harvest these wolves. There will have to be changes made to the Colorado Constitution to allow harvest of the wolves even by state agencies. There are similar examples of this in other states as well. Please don't allow Montana to become like California or Colorado in management and harvest of our fish and game. Thank you for your time and opportunity to speak.
Further proponents.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Bill Mitchell, M-I-T-C-H-E-L-L. I'm from Missoula. I don't have a lot to add. I think everybody has spoken pretty well and tells you what this bill is about. I'm not a trapper, but I do support trapping. I'm a hunter and a fisherman, a lifelong resident of Montana. And I urge you to support this and let us get a chance to vote on it. Thank you.
Further proponents in the room.
Good morning, committee. Charles Deneau, D-E-N-O-W-H, here on behalf of United Property Owners of Montana. I want to thank the sponsor for bringing this bill again this session. He came to us very early on in the process last session to make sure that nothing in this constitutional amendment would somehow diminish our property rights. And he even made some modifications to the language so there would be no doubt that this wouldn't imperil property rights. So we feel very comfortable with this language. And we think it's very important that we put these protections in place to preserve these rights to hunt, fish, and trap in Montana. So we urge your support.
Further opponents? Or sorry, proponents, sorry.
Excuse me there for a minute. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Peggy Trank, and that's spelled T-R-E-N-K, and I'm here today on behalf of the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation. RMEF has over 13,000 members here in Montana, and we stand in support of House Bill 372. The mission of RMEF is to ensure the future of elk, other wildlife, their habitat, and our hunting heritage. HB 372 goes right to the heart of our hunting heritage mission. We are concerned that current constitutional protections for harvesting wild fish and game are insufficient for protecting anti-hunting and anti-trapping attacks through ballot initiatives. RMEF members would rather invest in habitat and access rather than fighting campaigns to defend hunting and trapping. RMEF also believes, as others have mentioned, that the proposed amendment addresses private property rights and maintains the legislature and Fish, Wildlife, and Parks' ability to set regulations. For those reasons, we respectfully asked for a due pass on this bill. Thank you.
Further proponents in the room.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Scott Bollinger, for the record, B-O-U-L-A-N-G-E-R, here today on behalf of the Montana Outfitters and Guides Association. We support the bill and just wanted to thank the sponsor for doing it. We think it's a really good situation for us to preserve our future. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Further proponents.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Scott Vollmer. That's V-O-L-L-M-E-R. I'm here also representing, I'm as the Director-at-Large of the Montana Outfitters and Guides Associations, but more I'm representing myself, and all the other proponents have pretty much said what needs to be said about this bill. I and our organization does support it. I urge a due pass. Let the people of Montana decide on this issue. Thank you.
Further proponents in the room.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Katjana Stutzer. It's K-A-T-J-A-N-A-S-T-U-T-Z-E-R. I'm here on behalf of the Montana chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, and we strongly support the right and opportunity for every Montana citizen to hunt, fish, and trap. And we see this bill before us today that reconstructs this right that is already in our Constitution. And while some may argue that this is unnecessary because the Constitution already says the opportunity to harvest wild fish and game, as the sponsor mentioned, Montana BHA really appreciates the intent of this bill to strengthen those rights. We absolutely support that. And amending our state's constitution is a big deal. Definitely don't take that lightly. So we just wanted to flag two just technical little language snags that we see. It doesn't change our support for the bill, but we definitely understand what the sponsor is doing with current means and methods. We think this might come into conflict with maintaining the right for the department to for the necessary management and have a bit of conflict there with the legislator having the regulatory authority to delegate to a designated public agency or commission, FWP, with those means and methods. So perhaps there's some work to resolve that tension. And then the only other little snag here is the term wildlife. Definitely agree that we need to protect the harvesting of all animals rather than just the game species that the sponsor is mentioning. But we think that that word is maybe a little too broad and would cover the killing of, for example, bald eagles, any wildlife. So perhaps there's a different term we can find there. But overall, we support the concept of the bill and have confidence that we can resolve just small technical issues with this, and we would urge a due pass. Thank you.
Further proponents in the room? Seeing none, we'll move online. Keith Cubista, and if there are proponents online, if you could raise your hand at this time, I'd appreciate it. Thank you. Mr. Cabista, you're on mute. Mr. Cabista, you're still on mute. There you go.
I'm very sorry. Cabista, K-U-B-I-S-T-A, hunter, trapper, Montana citizen. I represent myself. I also support the consumptive use referred to as harvest. It's presently only partially protected, but not fully secured in our Constitution. And although nothing can be made absolute, it's necessary to fortify protections for sportsmen against the cancel culture's attempts to inflict their non-traditional values on our Montana way of life. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, this bill is exactly what's needed to prevent that. And you've already heard about many states who have lost trapping to the radical animal rights movement. Many can no longer use their traditional methods and means, so that's an important change that's encaptured in this amendment. Likewise, Montana hunters and trappers have faced ballot box challenges before, and you've heard about that. And we're going to be very, very vulnerable to predictable onslaughts that whittle away taking pieces of our traditions one at a time unless we pass this amendment. And the ultimate decision to realistically preserve our Montana heritage from those who want to eliminate activities that they deem inappropriate should be made by the citizens of Montana. Therefore, I recommend you give the people of this state the opportunity to make that choice, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. We will move on to Ben Erickson.
Good morning, committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to support HB 372. My name is Ben Erickson, E-R-I-C-K-S-O-N. I am from Belgrade, Montana. I am the principal for Citizens for Balanced Use. We promote family multiple-use recreation. We also stand up for recreation and private property rights. I am also the first vice president of Outdoor Heritage Coalition. As I said, CBU stands up for multiple-use recreation, including hunting, fishing, and trapping. We are a strong promoter of families and friends recreating outdoors together. Today, we may hear about the influence of out-of-staters regarding HB 372. My first 8 years after graduating Montana State University found me employed out of state. I enjoyed returning to Montana to hunt and fish, as many former Montanans did. Today, Fish, Wildlife, and Parks has the Come Home to Hunt program. Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks states, quote, "The program is aimed at continuing Montana family traditions by making an effort to bring sons, daughters, and family back home during hunting season at substantially reduced price." Currently, 75% of hunting tag revenue comes from non-resident license sales. This is important for our economy and for funding Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. Our hunting, fishing, and trapping heritage deserves strengthening for our family traditions. Please support HB 372 with a pass. Thank you very much for your time and efforts today.
Thank you. We'll go to Stacy Kendall.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Stacy Kendall, K-A-N-D-E-L, and I live in Trout Creek, Montana. I would like to thank the sponsor of this bill for all the work he's done. And as a life, I echo what everybody else, all the other proponents have mentioned about this bill. I've been a lifelong sportswoman, and I'm a mother of three, ages 12 and younger, who are raring to go when they're hunting and trapping and fishing. And I ask you to please do pass HB 372 to help secure my children's rights and for future generations to come. Thank you.
We'll go on to Charles Whitlam.
Good morning, Chairman and representatives. My name is Charlie Whitlam. Ironically, I am from or not from, but I'm living in California currently, and I am with Howl for Wildlife. I'm a proponent of HB 372. I've recently seen an email discrediting the thousands of Montana sportsmen and non-resident sportsmen who add significantly to the economy of Montana through hunting and fishing. Because we successfully connect sportsmen with issues and decision makers, we've been subject to claims of paying people to manipulate legislators or make it look like emails are coming from different people. These claims are absolutely false. These irresponsible claims are nothing more than an attempt to suppress the voice of sportsmen around Montana, both residents and those who come to Montana to take part in its rich, wild activities. Unfortunately, I've even had threats directed at me and my livelihood. Here are some reasons why this bill is important for Montana legislators to hear from all sportsmen. Non-resident tag and permit sales alone in Montana in 2022 were $45 million. Resident tag and permit sales were $15 million. This is $60 million combined in just the sale of tags. Overall, the total economic impact of hunting in Montana in 1 year results in $1.1 billion. Over 12,000 jobs supported, over $330 million in salaries and wages, and over $120 million in state, local, and federal taxes. If this bill was about property taxes or schools, you wouldn't hear from non-residents. But since so many come to Montana to add to the economy and the management of wildlife through hunting and fishing, this issue has become an important issue to those who take part in your outdoor activities. Let's also note that although many non-residents have taken part in this process, thousands of these voices are residents. Furthermore, our entire outreach content was provided for
1 minute
by multiple groups of concerned Montanans. For hunters who come to Montana, we want to invest in the future of hunting in Montana. We want to see our kids and grandchildren be able to continue to enjoy the wonderful opportunities that Montana provides. As stated previously, this has tremendous benefits for the economy of Montana. Sportsmen aren't trying to manipulate legislators. We are pro-wildlife. We are conservationists. In the U.S., we contribute over $100 billion to the economy and wildlife conservation in a single year. The only manipulation is from those who wish to destroy wildlife conservation, those who are anti-wildlife. Those are the anti-hunting groups. HB 372 will add to the protection of the North American model of wildlife conservation and the future of Montana. Thank you, and please do pass.
Lisa Bennett. Ms. Bennett, you are on mute. Ms. Bennett.
Sorry, this is Lisa Robertson, R-O-B-E-R-T-S-O-N, and I am an opponent, so I think you might have got mixed up with the online name, but I just got the thing to say unmute.
Sorry, Lisa. We have you down as a proponent, but I will move you to opponent. Thank you. Seeing no further opponent or proponents online, I see Thomas Ivor, you have your hand raised. You are marked as a opponent. If you are a proponent, you can unmute.
Hi there, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members, my name is Tom Irvine, T-O-M. I-R-V-I-N-E, and I live in Stevensville, Montana. I oppose H...
Mr. Irvin, yes. we are on proponent testimony, so we will call on you when we get to opponents. Seeing no further proponents online, we will move to opponents in the room.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Stephen Capra, C-A-P-R-A. I am with Footloose, Montana. Before I start, I want to hand out a couple of things here that directly relate to the dark money that's coming into our state.
by organizations that are trying to manipulate.
Mr. Capra, if you can repeat your testimony in the mic, please.
I am handing out a handout now that points out some of the dark money coming into our state and what it's doing to try to pass this legislation. We're being manipulated by out-of-state interests to drive something that will allow trapping to expand in our state. Let's make no mistake, this isn't about hunting and fishing. This is about trapping. This is about giving less than half of 1% of our population the power to dictate wildlife policy in Montana. And that is wrong. That has never been what Montana is all about. A lot of people say, oh, groups like this want to get rid of wildlife. Well, let me make one thing clear. Before I came and worked in Montana, I worked to create two national monuments in New Mexico. Who worked side by side with me in those monument fights? Hunters. Hunters worked with me every step of the way, and we protected close to 1 million acres that they are allowed to hunt in. So I don't want to be told that I'm anti-hunting. That's not the case and has never been the case. We have a situation here that is going to end Montana's ability to delist grizzly bears. Because what this bill will do will make snaring a constitutional amendment. Snaring will now be part of the Constitution of Montana. Any thought you had at delisting grizzly bears now goes out the window. We know that to be the truth. We are creating constitutional rights for this fragment of our society. What's next? Are we going to have constitutional? Are we going to have constitutional amendments for off-road vehicle use? Are we going to have constitutional amendments for using certain toothbrushes? We're getting into dangerous territory here that I think everybody needs to sit back and think about. Dark money interests pouring money into this state. Uncontrolled management of wildlife that's now going to be told that trapping is the way we manage wildlife. We're going way out of bounds here. And despite all these assurances that Fish, Wildlife, and Parks will be in charge, this is a constitutional right. This will supersede anything else that we work on. We must say no to this. We must stop this nonsense right here today and not allow this to move forward. This state was not built on doing something for a small fragment of the population. The vast majority of people in this state oppose this. Thank you.
Further proponents in the room, opponents in the room.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Rayleigh Honeycutt, H-O-N-E-Y, C-U-T-T with the Montana Stock Growers Association. I first want to start off by saying that our organization had a lot of thoughtful conversation and discussion about this bill before we took the position of opposition, and really understand and appreciate the heritage and history of hunting in our state, and we don't want that to be lost within our opposition. But I am standing before you in opposition with some concerns about unintended consequences. Our organization is an organization that has many landowners across the state, and private property rights is an important one that our organization continues to fight for and stand on behalf of our members. This amendment for us, we believe, if passed, will lead to court challenges, and with those court challenges will give the power to the judiciary or judges to determine whose rights have primacy. One example that I want to share with you is in regards to page 2, line 19, where it says, the state shall give preference to hunting, fishing, and trapping by citizens as the primary. Now, you've heard today that private property rights are discussed and covered in this. But one example that I wanted to share is in regards to water rights. So if hunting, fishing, and trapping are the primary, and we have a situation where there is a court case where fishing and in-stream flow is against irrigation or stock water rights, to us, our concern is that fishing or, you know, fish habitat beats private property right owners and water right owners. The second portion, again, I just wanted to highlight, is a question for us that makes us very uncomfortable, and it relates to corner crossings. Even though, again, property rights are protected in this amendment, we feel that it could be challenged and corner crossings could come into play as part of this conversation. So with those concerns, we hesitantly, because many of our members are hunters, fishers, and trappers, stand in opposition of this bill. Thank you.
Further opponents?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Krista Lee Evans, EVANS, and I'm here today on behalf of the Association of Gallatin Agricultural Irrigators. And we have concerns as well about the unintended consequences associated with this amendment as it relates to the right to fish and how that has historically been interpreted by the courts. We have multiple examples of the right to fish equating to minimum in-stream flows. For example, and this is a Flathead Joint Board of Control decision, the Ninth Circuit recognized that the right to water for hunting and fishing purposes is a right to prevent other appropriators from depleting the stream's waters below a protected level in any area where the non-consumptive right applies. So we do have case law, we do have precedents where the right to fish equates to a minimum in-stream flow. And the next step on that is that if this amendment were to pass, then ultimately what we end up with is two conflicting constitutional provisions. Article 9, Section 3 of the Constitution recognizes and protects existing water rights. And so how would those two constitutional rights be balanced if this amendment were to pass? What this means for my irrigators in the Gallatin is that when water gets low in July and August, is that the water goes to the fish because it's constitutionally required as a right rather than to my irrigators, unless by chance they have a pre-statehood water right potentially. This bill causes significant concerns associated with our water rights and the ability to exercise our water rights, and not only for agriculture, it's all water rights. It's municipal, it's industrial, it's commercial, it's everybody. So we have significant concerns with the unintended consequences. It's pretty clear in case law that the right to fish equates to in-stream flow, and for those reasons, we would ask for a do not pass. Thank you.
Further opponents in the room?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. It's wonderful to be with you here this morning and see familiar faces from my other committees. For the record, my name is Marcus Strange, S-T-R-A-N-G-E, and I'm here today representing the Montana Wildlife Federation. We are very grateful for the good intentions of the sponsor here. We think protecting hunting, fishing, and trapping are critical. Our organization for 87 years has done that very thing. And it was after months of deliberation and fact-finding and research that we regrettably have to oppose this bill and this amendment. There are a few reasons that we are doing that. One, the bill is very vague. It creates a lot of unintended consequences. It's a buzzword. I feel like you're going to hear a lot today, and we just have a lot of concerns about that. This will not stop ballot initiatives, as has been said, and does not necessarily make them any harder. Additionally, we feel like this is going to breed conflict and inevitably lead to more litigation because we will have to let the courts decide how this all plays out at the end of the day. There will be sweeping effects for a multitude of unintended groups. I wonder how this will affect timber, oil, and gas, as well as coal. And so, with that being said, I would just also add that making hunting a primary right has implications for management. Fish, Wildlife, and Parks is not here today, but I would be very interested in hearing how they would feel if they were needing to shut down a wildlife management area, for example, and a citizen felt that it was their right to continue to hunt, fish, or trap on that wildlife management area, and where the conflict there would be. So while we want to support hunting, fishing, and trapping, we feel that it is already sufficiently protected in the Constitution, and we would ask for a do not pass. Thank you.
Further proponents in the room.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Colin Cooney, that's C-O-O-N-E-Y, here today on behalf of Trout Unlimited in reluctant opposition to this bill. I'm a fifth-generation Montanan. I'm a hunter fisher. I was born here in Helena, so I can appreciate what the sponsor and what the proponents are trying to do. We've been working on this bill since 2017 when it first came, and we still continue to have the same issues that we've had in the past, primarily the specific language of the bill. You know, as you've heard already, you know, line or page 3, lines 3 through 5, we're not really sure why it's necessary to put management directives into the Constitution. I think that could have some serious issues. You heard the opponent before me with some examples. My example, if we tie the state's hands saying that hunting, fishing, and trapping is a constitutional right, and it's the primary means of state's management, something like the Yellowstone closure in 2015 because of PKD, or hoot owl restrictions because of warming water temperatures, somebody could come and say, my constitutional right is being infringed upon, or you're not allowing me to fish on these rivers, and so they're going to take it to court. So I think that, as you've heard, unintended consequences of that, a lot of litigation will come out of it, and finally, excuse me, I think it was already brought up, but the fact that wildlife is not defined in statute is a huge issue. It's extremely open-ended, which is why it's wild game in the current Constitution and not wildlife. So that would definitely have to be fixed as well. So for those reasons, Mr. Chairman, reluctantly, we do have to oppose. Thank you.
Further opponents in the room?
Chair Lear, members of the committee, my name is Keegan Medrano, that's M-E-D-R-A-N-O, and I'm here representing the ACLU of Montana. We urge you to vote no on HB 372, which we believe is both, of course, unnecessary and redundant, and which creates tension with hundreds of years of settled law around Indian treaties, federal Indian law and policy, tribal ordinances, and state and tribal compacts. Tension that could exacerbate and expand conflict of hunting and fishing within reservations and on treaty guaranteed off reservation hunting rights, and potentially create costly and harmful litigation for the state. People have hunted and fished these lands for thousands upon thousands of years. Neither the 1889 Constitution or the original 1972 Constitution featured such language that were proposed here, and yet throughout Montana's history, hunting and fishing have been central pillars of people's lives. Montanans do not need their every right and way of life enumerated in the Constitution because our documents vest and reserve rights to us. Hunting and fishing have broad support and will continue to have broad support. But tribal nations within and outside of Montana have recognized hunting and fishing rights to both the access and taking. This includes the reservation and off the reservation rights. And some of the treaties include the Treaty of Hellgate from 1855, the Treaty of Blackfeet from 1855, and the Treaty of Fort Laramie from 1868. And language is often the exclusive right and taking of fish in the streams running through or bordering said reservation, and also the right of taking fish and hunting at all usual and accustomed places. And these treaties and more treaties cover tribes such as the CSKT, as well as Blackfeet, Gros Ventre, Crow, and Northern Cheyenne. It should be noted that tribal nations outside of Montana also possess bison hunting rights, and those include tribes in Oregon, Idaho, and Washington. The constitutional amendment as written is either completely ignorant is willfully malicious to this history, to this law, and to the realities in this state, and respect to the fellow sovereigns of this land. It is a reckless, shoehorned insertion of rights into a settled ecosystem of law set by the U.S. Supreme Court, existing law and policy, and most crucially, the inherent sovereignty of tribes. HB 372 will create an untenable tension of law and invite constitutional assertions of rights into trump tribal hunting and fishing rights and create a backdoor for non-Indian free land hunting within reservations. This is unacceptable. Please vote no on HB 372. Chair Lear, may I be excused to use the restroom? I will be back to answer questions. Thank you.
Further opponents. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Nick Gevock. It's G-E-V as in Victor, O-C-K. And I'm here today representing the Endangered Species Coalition. You've heard a lot of reasons why this bill's bad for sound wildlife management. I won't go into that. The fact is, we do have a simple, clean constitutional right to harvest wild fish and game. It was written as such in 2004 for a reason, and it's worked well for two decades. We don't see a reason to change that. But even more troubling, the language requiring that hunting is the preferred method of managing wildlife is problematic. This may be appropriate for game species and fur bearers, but we also have wildlife that aren't classified as such and for which hunting is not the preferred method. A lot of species require a lot of different management. And finally, since a lot of the points have been made, you know, this law is clearly meant to bar citizens from bringing about other referendums on key wildlife management issues. But the fact is, Montana barred game farms back in 2000 via citizen initiative. And that remains one of our key conservation successes, one that's emulated throughout the country. And people often say, we wish we'd had the foresight to do what you did. So we don't think we need this. We don't think that we already have this clean constitutional right to our rich hunting and fishing heritage. And with that, I'd ask you for a no vote. Thank you.
Further opponents in the room?
Chairman, committee members, my name is Claire Beelman, B as in boy, double E-L-M-A-N, and I represent Footloose, Montana. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. I urge you to vote no against House Bill 372 because it jeopardizes public school funding from the state trust lands, which is required both by law and by the Constitution of the Montana. HB 372's mandate that will be in the Constitution for primary and preferred citizen hunting, trapping, and fishing is inconsistent with how many state lands are currently being managed. Leased lands, you can see on the DNRC's website, which I included in my written testimony, there are many leased lands which are closed to public entry. How, then, can we manage with citizen trapping, hunting, and fishing on those lands? The lessee's activities, such as grazing, growing crops, mining, other natural resources extractions, they conflict with public access. There are other non-leased state trust lands which are either permanently or temporarily closed, as the DNRC says, to maintain site or property value. The point of the state trust lands, as given by the Enabling Act of 1889 by the U.S., when Montana was created as a state, was to have these state trust lands maintain their value for public school funding. This bill, as it is written, will be in both constitutional conflict and statutory conflict, and I urge you to vote no against it.
Further opponents in the room?
Hello, Chairman, members of the committee. Amy Seaman, S-E-A-M-A-N, here on behalf of Montana Audubon in opposition to House Bill 372. You've heard a lot of the reasons why, and so I'll give another example and point out that, as well, our opposition stems from the vague language that we think is introduced by using the term wildlife. We often go into testimony and talk about 750-ish or so non-game species in Montana that are typically not managed in that way, though often can benefit from small trapping to manage, you know, if wildlife is pests or something like that. Our laws are very strong to be able to manage that. So there are a lot of other species that are unintended consequences potentially, so there could be ways to tighten that language, as you've heard from others. And one of the examples as well that I want to give why we have opposition to this bill is, if folks can remember 2015, we had Senate Bill 284, and it was to potentially look at banning hunting of sage grouse when our state was discussing what our management was going to look like and how we would proceed if we saw that the population wasn't doing well. It took a lot of work on, you know, across the board, industry, nonprofits, conservation groups, you name it. People came to the board and came up with a plan so that groups could support strong state management of a species. And that is what happened. And we were able to support that as Montana Audubon, supporting, hey, you know, we're going to oppose the stoppage of hunting of sage grouse because we know our state can manage this species. And we don't want to see any legislation that would jeopardize us being able to support the state in managing the wildlife for the benefit of all the public. And that's the other part I'll just bring up, is this really can bring up conflict when it comes to managing our public lands that are used for consumptive and non-consumptive users alike, and that wildlife is managed for all of those across the board. So just be considerate with those aspects as you consider this amendment, and we thank you, but urge a no vote. Thank you.
Further opponents?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Gail Joslin, J-O-S-L-I-N. I'm here today representing the Helena Hunters and Anglers Association, as well as myself. I have been a hunter for 54 years, and the majority of our membership within Helena Hunters and Anglers has hunted for more than 50 years, which gives some indication as to age of our membership. But this bill, we believe, would unnecessarily provide complexity to a beautifully and simple 42-word passage of our existing Constitution. It would lead to almost certain litigation as to how this supposed right would be executed. It mandates how wildlife management would be conducted by stating that the preferred manner of managing fish and wildlife is through trapping, hunting, and fishing. This is a serious overreach into what should be scientifically based fish and wildlife management by placing an unsubstantiated requirement on resource managers. So fish and wildlife should be and has been managed in recent history with science, and the Fish and Wildlife Commission and public involvement has worked, and it's working today for setting seasons, bag limits, etc. HB 372 appears to be a dangerous Trojan horse, tricking the people of Montana into voting for something that they already have by inserting the word right, without understanding the consequences of the individual words that are being used. Article 9, Section 7 of the Montana Constitution is not broken, so please do not try to fix it. Thank you.
Further opponents in the room?
First of all, I'm going to apologize for my voice. I'm going to do the best I can. My name is Shani Henry. I am a veterinarian. S-H-A-N-I-H-E-N-R-Y. I am a veterinarian, and I served on the most recent trapping advisory committee for FWP from 2018 to 2019. I have practiced veterinary medicine for 25 years, and six of those years included work in a local practice providing the majority of medical care for the Montana Wild Clinic wildlife patients. I am strongly opposed to HB 372. I am opposed for a long list of reasons. Many of my points have been covered by others, so I'm going to concentrate on the veterinary specific and advocating for non-target species point of view. First, let's point out the fact that this bill is a blatant attempt to include trapping with protections already provided to hunting and angling. This bill is really about trapping, hence the pronounced trapper presence today. Second, trapping is highly controversial. That is a fact. There's public opinion to both extremes on both sides of this. It should not be equated with ethical fair chase hunting and angling. It is both my personal and professional opinion that trapping is inhumane, indiscriminate, and not supported by sound science. Third, every veterinary professional organization in existence has official stances against traps and snares. Members of our profession have taken an oath to relieve all animal suffering and to do no harm. Fourth, it is my experience that the vast majority of trappers and trapping organizations have been extremely unwilling to comply with measures to alleviate the concerns of the non-trapping Montana citizens who wish to safely recreate in our state with their families and with their pets. This is a long-standing record of resistance. In my opinion, the most important measure they have adamantly resisted is a required minimum check time, trap check time, to limit suffering of both target and non-target species, but also to improve the outcomes for those non-target species. Fifth, it would be unwise for this body to tie the hands of FWP regarding options for wildlife management. Requiring trapping as a main method for wildlife management is an outright attempt to protect trapping interests long term. Current means and methods include snares. Making it required wildlife management to use stares is an embarrassment and abysmal. Sixth, the longstanding history of our outstanding state constitution merits a high level of respect. This bill is certainly not worthy of altering our constitution. The majority of our citizens do not wish to alter the constitution, and they certainly do not want to alter it for an inhumane and highly outdated hobby. Thank you very much for your consideration.
Further opponents in the room?
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Jim Bell, B-E-L-L, and I live in Bozeman, Montana. I am a lifelong hunter and fisherman. I believe my privileges are adequately protected in Montana. This isn't California. This is Montana. So I'm comfortable that we'll be able to continue hunting and fishing in Montana. This bill is about adding trapping. Let's be very clear. That is the addition with this particular bill. This would give super privileges to a very small segment of the Montana population. And it would supersede the rights of the vast majority of Montanans that use our public lands. They lose, trappers win with this bill. I'm also somewhat offended at the language that includes fishermen, hunters, and ethical sportsmen along with trappers. There's absolutely nothing ethical or sportsmanlike about trapping. Please vote no on HB 372. Thank you.
Further opponents in the room?
Chairman, vice chairs, committee members, my name is Mark Cook, M-A-R-C-C-O-O-K-E. I have a handout, may I?
Yes, you may.
As I said, my name is Mark Cook, and I'm representing Wolves of the Rockies, and I am in Stevensville, Montana. Out-of-state licenses are increasing, and please bear with me because this all ties in. What we're seeing is the commercialization of wildlife by the department wanting to increase the amount of out-of-state licenses. We believe that puts more pressure on the locals, the people that live here. I'd also like to talk about an individual group that actually called in today, and they're from California. 457, okay? I'm one person. 457 people from this organization from California have each sent you all an email saying support the Constitution that Representative Fielder is, or the amendment Representative Fielder is trying to bring forward. My voice is getting drowned out. Why? Because out-of-state interest, and we, listen, I've heard it 100 times, people laugh about California, but out-of-state interest are taking away my voice. I encourage you to read the handout. I tried to make it as simple as possible, and it's an easy read. I'm of the opinion that out-of-state organizations are well-financed, well-organized, as we're seeing today, to influence each of your decisions on whether this goes down the road to the next step. We strongly oppose the wording in this initiative. The preferred manner of managing wildlife and fish is not the way to go. Remember, these emails you're getting, these 457 emails, do not say Montana. When I send you an email or my followers and supporters send you emails, they all say Montana or where they're from. This, in my opinion, is deceitful. You're thinking that you're getting emails from your constituents, and you may not be, but yet it's influencing my wishes for wildlife. And I'll close. I have 100 things I could be saying, but I'm going to close with one thing. I've been doing this for 15 years. And as God is my judge, I have never once heard anybody in the community that I swim in say, oh, we're coming for trapping first, and then we're coming for hunting. That I've never, ever heard that. I strongly encourage you to do the right thing and oppose this bill. Thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Further opponents in the room. Opponents in the room. Seeing none, we'll move online. We will start with Carrie Gunderson.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Dr. Carrie Gunderson, G-U-N-D-E-R-S-O-N, and I live in the Swan Valley. I'm a third-generation Montanan. Both my grandfather, Ole Gunderson, and my father, Jack Gunderson, were state representatives for Cascade County. I sent each of you an email yesterday with more information that I don't have time to cover today. I oppose House Bill 372. It does not serve the common good of Montanans. Trapping is not hunting, it is sport. Recreation in Montana generates roughly $1.1 million in gross receipts. This bill does not even mention the impact of recreation and does not address the concerns of roughly 96% of Montanans who choose to recreate on public lands at the state and federal level in concern for their safety, the safety of their pets, and the safety of their children and grandchildren. I ask you to please vote no on this bill. Thank you for your consideration.
Lisa Robertson.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and the committee. I'm Lisa Robertson, R-O-B-E-R-T-S-O-N. I live in Missoula. I am a Montana citizen. I'm a hiker, trail runner, cross-country skier. I love Montana, I value our wildlife, and I think these are traditional values. I oppose this proposed legislation because it is about trapping. I don't need to repeat what others have said, but there's a reason why people oppose this. People who want to hunt and fish already have this right. It's in the Constitution. This is overreach for all the reasons we've heard, but there's also a reason why trapping is in here. The majority of Montanans do not support trapping. It provides extra rights to a very tiny minority of people and really unleashes destruction and cruelty to all of our wildlife. So it is my hope that you will oppose and not let this go forward. We already have the opportunities and rights that people have been enjoying in this state for generations. We do not need this bill. Thank you very much. Or amendment.
Casey York.
Mr. Vice Chair, representatives, I'm Casey York with Trap Free Montana Public Lands out of the Bitterroot. There's a reason FWP came out in the past in opposition to this constitutional amendment, specifically regarding the legal ramifications which happened in other states with these rights. We hope FWP legal are available there today, as they should be. Changing from a preserved opportunity, which we as Montanans overwhelmingly supported, into a right will be costly in the courts, to wildlife, law enforcement, private property owners, our state's reputation, while benefiting non-residents. Thrown under the bus are over 500 species, comprising 85% of our Montana wildlife, as non-game. What about the rare and protected species? Wildlife are far more than a commodity, yet many have their eyes on Montana, and a California-based organization with an outfitter as president who is helping them by flooding all of your email accounts to change our Constitution and support like-minded bills, advancing their position, and without divulging to you, they are not residents of the state of Montana. They did this in 2017 under a different name, same denominators. Unlike this proposal, sound wildlife management is based on the best available science, with habitat a priority, supporting biodiversity, wildlife corridors, connectivity, and non-lethal conflict mitigation to preserve and conserve wildlife for all. As Aldo Leopold, the father of wildlife management, wrote, a thing is right when it tends to preserve the integrity, stability, and beauty of the biotic community. It is wrong when it tends otherwise. This proposal is completely wrong. Thank you, and thank you, Vice Chair, for allowing sufficient time for comments. We appreciate that.
Michael Storger.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thanks for the opportunity to comment. I'll be brief and only bring up one of the many points that speak to the deficiencies of this bill. The state constitution is being abused to mandate wildlife policy. The constitution is a foundational document to establish the framework of how to govern a given body. It's not a toy that needs to be tinkered with every time a special interest group wants a favorite activity protected, nor is it a software program that needs a version update every year. In my opinion, the heritage activities of hunting, fishing, and trapping are not rights. Free speech or access to clean air and water are rights. These are privileges that must be licensed, no different than driving. I won't ask you to change the Constitution to protect my right to snowmobile. Applying the strict scrutiny legal protection test to any of our current regulations around hunting, fishing, and trapping would effectively eliminate them from our books if they become constitutionally protected rights. And that's exactly what the national out-of-state groups like the NRA and Howl for Wildlife want, because naming these activities as rights shelters them from limitations. And lastly, I would ask, Mr. Chair, why would a California resident who represents Howl for Wildlife be allowed to testify? Thank you very much.
Mr. Storger, if you could please state and spell your name for the record. Thank you.
Michael Storger, S-T-O-E-R-G-E-R. Thank you.
Thank you. Andrew McKean.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Andrew McKean. That's M-C-K-E-A-N. I'm from Glasgow, and I'm here representing the leadership group of the Montana Sportsmen Alliance. Ours is a group of passionate and experienced Montana hunters that appreciates the intent of this bill, but are opposed for a couple of reasons. I spent yesterday evening, a nice chilly evening on the High Line, teaching hunter education to a classroom of eager students here in Glasgow, where I stressed one of the tenets of the Fish, Wildlife, and Parks Hunter Ed curriculum, that hunting is not a right. I'm quoting page 13 of the Montana Hunter Education Manual here. Hunting is a privilege, one that can be taken away if you fail to meet certain standards. That, by the way, is also a question on the official hunter education test. I personally worry, as a 20-year volunteer hunter ed instructor, and our leadership group worries, that this bill, by enshrining hunting as a constitutional right, will legitimize inappropriate or illegal hunting activity. Nowhere in the language of this bill is hunting differentiated from regulated, licensed, or legitimate hunting, and could be used as a convenient and compelling defense for poachers. We strongly encourage the addition of that legitimizing language. Furthermore, we worry that by giving hunting, fishing, and trapping preference for wildlife management in Montana, we will de-emphasize other management options that may be more effective and expedient, including relocating wildlife or temporary closures of fishing or hunting opportunities for resource and or human protection. For these reasons, we reluctantly ask a do not pass on this bill. Thank you.
John Harrison.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, committee. My name is John Harrison. I'm a staff attorney with the Confederated Salish and Kootenai Tribes. The tribes respectfully oppose this bill. No doubt the tribes have engaged in subsistence hunting and fishing in Montana from time immemorial. There's no doubt that tribes and tribal members recognize the importance of hunting and fishing to all Montanans today. But I think we'd echo the concerns you're hearing about unintended consequences of this bill. In particular, I'm not sure reading this language how this constitutional amendment applies in Indian country. How it would apply on reservations, specifically the Flathead Reservation. The tribes have a lot of cooperative fish and wildlife management actions they take with FWP. There's the Flathead Fish and Bird Hunting Agreement that's jointly managed by the state and the tribes. I'm not really sure how any of this would be impacted by this constitutional amendment. It leaves a lot of questions, a lot of open, sort of vague, broad language that is not clear to the tribes how it would apply in Indian country in Montana. I know it allows for reasonable regulation of hunting and fishing activities, but I'm not sure what that is. And if anybody's attended a Fish and Wildlife Commission regulation setting hearing, you certainly have difference of opinions over what reasonable regulation is. It's not a simple bill. The language is simple, but the results are not going to be simple. The tribes, I think without some clarifying amendments, the tribes could not support this bill as it's currently drafted. Certainly, as you've heard from some other folks, there's a difference between a constitutional right and a privilege. And while privileges can be regulated, can be suspended with reasonable regulation, the constitutional rights of an individual go through a different type of analysis. And so it's the tribes are just not sure what the ultimate results of this bill would be. I'd say it's a solution in search of a problem, but I'm not sure what it's solving, because people have the right to hunt and fish. It's currently an activity that goes on. It doesn't seem threatened. So I guess at this point, again, without some clarifying amendments, particularly around Indian country, the tribes couldn't support this bill, and we would respectfully ask that you do not pass HB 372. Thank you.
Peter, and I'm going to apologize for butchering your last name, Gein.
Hello?
You're
okay,
on.
You can hear me. Okay, my name's Peter Gwynn, and I'm from Condon, Montana.
Mr. Gwynn, if you could please state and spell your last name. Thank you for the committee, for the record.
G-U-Y-N-N.
Thank you.
Okay, my wife and I backpacked across Bob Marshall about 40 years ago, and we bought property there, and we lived off and on in Montana ever since in the Swan Valley. And we're right now in Denver, just hard to get up there in the winter, but I hope that passes a litmus test as to where I'm coming from, paying taxes, and for 40 years, I hope that does that. So I have a really good right to speak here and voice my opposition to this bill. But this bill is more than just about mouse traps and wildlife conservation. It's basically, I think a gentleman mentioned it before, this bill enshrines, and is an echo of these recent legislative attempts and successes, I suppose, to require the state wildlife agencies to set snares, irregardless of good advice within their own ranks, undercutting the wildlife protections that we have, and that's what we enjoy in Montana, and that's why we go there and live there, but. by enshrining this, and I'll just have to say trapping is controversial, and this really is what this bill is about, but it's my opinion, but means such as snaring, it just, this moral turpitude that just, who's going to report what they catch, what they bycatch? Is it endangered species? Why are there no longer certain species in the Swan Valley present? There's some good surveys showing that there's been some good results of the Endangered Species Act bringing the grizzly bears back in least core areas of Montana and in the West, but nothing so far as any really solid progress to help stop some of these attempts to just undercut
1 minute.
Any success that we've continued success in perpetuating wildlife diversity. But I think so when this comes down to a referendum, I think it's going to fail. But like the other half of the time right now, I'm in Colorado, and there were some misguided statements regarding the wolves in Colorado. We did have a referendum, and the citizens had the wisdom to vote for reestablishing wolf population in Colorado. It's a necessary thing to try to make some of our elk and deer populations healthy again, and bring some balance into the ecosystem here in Colorado. But there's plenty of provisions to handle bad wolves, and there was some misinformation passed on.
Connie Botman.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I am Connie Poten from Missoula, P-O-T-E-N. Thank you for the opportunity to speak about the public safety problems with HB 372. In December 2019, a young dog, Betsy, was caught in an illegal conibear trap on Missoula city land. Her owner couldn't open the trap and in panic watched her struggle and die. In November 2021, Leo, a 2-year-old blue heeler border collie mix, was caught in an illegal coyote trap next to Giant Springs State Park in Great Falls. Both the owner and the dog were injured. In acute pain, the dog bit his owner several times. These are unusual incidents in and around urban areas because trapping is illegal for safety concerns. But if trapping becomes a constitutional right, traps and snares will be legal on city property, and there will be many more of them. City ordinances will have no effect. All traps will be legal. Children and dogs will be injured. Some, like Betsy, will be killed. People will stop using playgrounds, or they'll risk the threat of snares and hidden baited traps in city parks, even dog parks, and large public places like Pioneer Park in Billings and the Missouri Headwaters State Park. Safe trap-free zones will be no more. The result will be lawsuits against the state for injury and empty parks and hometowns. Public lands are for the public, but HB 372 will give away our public lands to special interests and make them too dangerous for the general public to access. This is simply unconstitutional. Please vote down this seriously flawed, unnecessary bill. Thank you.
Anja Heister. I butchered that one too.
Yeah, Mr. Vice Chair and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to state my opposition to HB 372. My name is Anja Heister, that's H-E-I-S-T-E-R, and I live in Missoula. I've been in Montana for 23 years. Extremists among Montana lawmakers, the Montana Trappers Association, and wealthy trophy hunting organizations are waging an open war against Montana's wildlife and now the general public. Their goal? Total takeover of wildlife management and exclusion of the general public from any decision-making process related to conservation. HB 372 is largely driven by out-of-state organizations, including the Safari Club International, Pope and Young, the U.S. Sportsman Alliance, but also by in-state organizations such as Sportsmen for Fish and Wildlife, the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, and of course the Montana Trapper Association. And now the California-based tech-savvy nonprofit Howl for Wildlife has gotten involved. Its founder is a trophy hunter and outfitter who can't wait to come to Montana and kill a grizzly bear with his bow. Howl for Wildlife uses militaristic strategies of deceiving, manipulating, and overwhelming legislators while outnumbering the general public. Howl for Wildlife provides an online platform for trophy hunters and trappers to manipulate legislators in Montana by sending deceptive mass emails, deceiving legislators into believing that there is massive support for HB 372 when there is not. Howl has sent you 138,000 emails as of March 11, which comes down to around 900 emails per legislator.
Ms. Heister, we are not here to debate what the validity of a organization. We are here to debate the bill. Thank you.
The goal is to intervene with states' constitutions and to drown out the voices of real Montana citizens.
1 minute.
This is unacceptable. Trapping has no place in the Montana Constitution. I urge you to vote against HB 372. Thank you very much.
Thomas Irvin.
Hi there, everyone. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tom Irvine, T-O-M-I-R-V-I-N-E, and I live in Stevensville, Montana, and I still oppose House Bill 372 and hope that you do too. Unfortunately, the government uses terms like management to really mean killing, just like the use of the term to dispatch has become a user-friendly term to also mean killing. This bill, making the killing of animals, including making trapping a right rather than a privilege, will lead to huge legal and law enforcement issues. Using trapping as a means to kill animals and making it a right rather than a privilege weakens the state's accountability requirements, just like making driver's licenses a right rather than a privilege would create chaos. Making trapping a right rather than a privilege will increase the suffering of animals are subjected to. The truth is that the use of leg hold traps are extremely cruel, no matter what biased experts say. I have seen personally the barbarity of leg hold traps and lack of fair chase, where the victims become prey from other animals with no defense, and where victims chew off their own limbs to free themselves. Making this behavior a right has no place anywhere, let alone in Montana. This bill will substantially increase the suffering of animals and reverse any progress in ending these barbaric practices. Lastly, there is no fear of hunting being banned in Montana, as the sponsor has suggested. And the increased numbers in coyotes is due to the elimination of larger apex predators. Please vote no on House Bill 372. Thank you.
Lisa Bennett.
Mr. Chair, she's not here.
Thank you. Peter Gwynn, you had already raised or spoke, but if this is a different person. Mr. Gwynn, you're on mute. Moving on, seeing no further opponents online, we'll move to informational witnesses. Brian Gosh, and Mr. Gosh has gotten a hold of me, and he is actually a proponent, so he will be put in the record as a proponent.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the House Judiciary Committee. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Thank you. My name is Brian Gosch, G-O-S-C-H. I'm a lawyer and registered lobbyist with the National Rifle Association of America. And bills like House Bill 372 seek to protect against attacks on traditional methods for hunting and fishing and trapping, such as firearms and archery equipment, and provide for a scientific mandate that all laws and regulations should be based on sound conservation and wildlife management principles, taking emotion and politics out of the equation. You heard from other proponents that there are 23 states that currently have some form of constitutional right to hunt and fish. Oregon has one working through the system now. They could become the 24th. Of those 23 states with the current constitutional provision, 13 states use the NRA model language, which is stronger language than what you see before you in House Bill 372. Oregon could become the 14th state with that stronger language. So I want to point out those two significant differences between that stronger language and what House Bill 372 offers. First, House Bill 372 refers to, quote, the right to use current means and methods, which is less definite or clear than the term traditional methods. And as you heard from the opponents, there's likely to be a challenge at some point, and the term current will likely be whatever is at that moment. So it could be 10 years from now, 20 years from now, and rules could change. And they'll look at the plain meaning of that term current, which is belonging to the present time, happening or being used or done now, as opposed to traditionally recognized methods. The second issue is that the bill lacks the reference to the limitation of the state's power, namely, quote, subject only to reasonable statutes enacted by the legislature and reasonable regulations adopted by FWP.
1 minute.
And then the key language is that limits it is to promote wildlife conservation and management and to preserve the future of hunting and fishing. This version instead allows the necessary management statutes enacted by the legislature and regulatory authority without limiting what the state considers necessary or reasonable, and without stating that the goals of any state regulation have to be the conservation and preservation of the future of hunting and fishing and trapping. The Kansas version that passed in 2016 contained trapping. Other states have that. The problems you heard from opponents do not exist in those states that have already passed the stronger language. And I'd be happy to work with Representative Fielder, and I applaud his efforts at bringing a bill like this. I'm happy to work with him and the committee on strengthening the language of this particular proposal. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
The Zoom participant whose name is Owner, would you please state and spell your name for the record? Thank you.
I believe my name is Tamzin Brown, T-A-M-Z-I-N, last name Brown, B-R-O-W-N. I'm an attorney in Montana and a resident of Gallatin County. I urge strongly a vote no on House Bill 372, the proposed amendment to enshrine trapping in the Montana Constitution. For any kind of amendment to a constitution, there is a strict scrutiny test that has to be undergone. That means that the proposed amendment has to be a compelling government interest as opposed to personal gain for a few people. The amendment also has to be narrowly tailored to achieve the government interest. Montana Constitution Article 2, Section 1 requires that political power be used solely for the good of the whole, meaning all citizens of Montana, not a select group. Montana Constitution Article 2, Section 3 repeats that Montana citizens have a right to a clean and healthful environment, and that enjoying this right comes with corresponding responsibility. I have heard a lot from the proponents about their rights and very little about any responsibility that they are taking for their actions. I want to incorporate and support all of the other opponent testimony to this bill. Hunting and fishing are guaranteed under the current Montana Constitution because they allow regulation and fair chase ethics. Trapping, by its definition, is indiscriminate and wasteful and is neither fair chase because it's hidden and it's baiting and is not good for the whole of citizens of this state because so-called non-target wildlife is also being depleted.
1 minute.
I urge the committee to vote no on House Bill 372.
Thank you. Seeing no further testimony online, we'll move to questions from the committee. Representative Kmetz.
I have a question for the bill sponsor.
Representative.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kmet.
Mr. Chair, I actually have two questions, but question number one, I'm referring to the 2016 Initiative 177. 55 of 56 counties approved this initiative. What county did not approve it?
Sir, Mr. Chair, Representative Kmet, that ballot initiative was to ban all trapping on public lands in Montana, and 55 of the 56 counties voted against that. Okay. The one county that voted for it was Missoula County, and I believe they got less than 51% of the vote to approve it. It was like 50.7 or something like that.
And Mr. Chair, second question.
Follow up.
How many, is there any data on fatalities of grizzly bears accidentally captured in any sort of trap?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kmet, I don't have any information on grizzly bears captured in traps or fatalities caused by grizzly bears that are captured in traps. It's very scarce. I've also worked with people out of Idaho where they have longer trapping seasons in areas occupied by grizzly bears, and they also allow the use of snares in areas occupied by grizzly bears, and I don't see very much information there about fatalities as a result of those issues in Idaho either. So I don't believe it's a big issue. It's something that's talked about, but what they're, I think some of the opponents were talking about relates to the delisting of grizzly bears and how they think that some of these regulations that we have right now could hinder the delisting of grizzly bears as a species, but that's a deeper subject, and you've already been here a long time, and I can talk to you that separately if you want to follow that up, but I don't believe that existing laws we have right now should hinder delisting one way or the other. Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Representative Mitchell.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for Mr. Irvin online.
Mr. Irvin?
Yes, here I am.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Irvin, you stated that the decrease in coyotes are not due to wolves, but due to larger apex animals. Can you elaborate on what those predators are and where you got that data from? Because I've never read anything anywhere that backs that up.
I can't give you specific sightings for that. I have read it numerous times, and I've heard it in being involved with meetings of environmental and fish, wildlife, and parks meetings. Where I'm coming from this is the idea that it has been noted that the increase in coyotes is directly caused by the lack of one, wolves, and two, mountain lions. And it's been proven, at least in Yellowstone, that if with the increase of wolves, it equates to the decrease of coyotes. So those are where my statements were coming from.
Representative Eckhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for the bill sponsor, please.
Representative.
Mr. Chair, Representative Eckert.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fielder. So one of the opponents, and I'm sorry I did not catch her name, talked about the increased ability to be able to trap wild animals in Pioneer Park in Billings. And since I'm from Billings, and actually Pioneer Park is in my district, I was wondering if you could speak to how hard or easy it might be for me to be able to get a trapping permit to be able to trap wild animals in Pioneer Park in Billings.
In order to get a, Mr. Chair, Representative Eckert, in order to be able to trap, you have to take a trapper education course, get a license to trap. But I also want to point out the line four, or the third line of this bill, the fourth thing that it does. It says the right to, is subject to the necessary management statutes enacted by the legislature and regulatory authority delegated by the legislature to a designated public agency or commission. So there are rules and regulations on the book that all trappers would have to follow in order to be able to do their trapping. And public agencies does not limit it to state agencies, so that could also trickle down to government or city municipalities, things like that. Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
So the likelihood for me to be able to actually trap wild animals in Pioneer Park in Billings is probably not going to happen then. Is that what you're saying?
Mr. Chair, Representative Eckert, it would be highly unlikely, and if you took a course in trapper certification class, you would probably learn in the ethics part of that course that that's not a very good place to do that practice. Mr. Chair.
Representative Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the sponsor.
Representative.
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson.
Thank you, Representative. I wanted to ask you to, we'll give you a chance to address some of the things that were mentioned by opponents, particularly when it came to temporary closures of streams and rivers due to low water, other type of management that we would typically consider to be reasonable. And it was stated that those activities would no longer be legal if this passed. Can you address that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, I disagree with that statement because the second part of the first sentence says that this does not create or imply any right of public trespass on private property or diminish in any way vested property rights. So we've already established private property rights, and this bill does nothing to supersede that or sidestep that, and it's specifically listed in the first sentence of this bill to protect those rights so that that intent is not dismissed.
Follow
Mr.
up?
Chair.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative, similarly, along the same lines, hoot owl restrictions and the such in late summer when we're restricting, in a way, fishing for the benefit of the fish. The way I read your language here, that also would not be precluded if this bill were to pass. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, that's true because that goes down to the third line, which says the right subject to the necessary management statutes enacted by the legislature and regulatory authority delegated to, by the legislature to a public agency or commission. And that goes back to the Fish, Wildlife, and Parks Commission. They've got those rules and regulations on the books now, and this does not change those rules and regulations, Mr. Chair.
Follow up. Thank you, and thank you, Representative. So the last thing I wanted to ask you about is the implied problem of making this a right is that people will no longer need a hunting license, and it will be an affirmative defense if you are out there hunting without a license or otherwise not following the rules, because now a person would just be able to say, I have a right to do this. Would you see a problem with that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, I don't think that is a problem at all. There's 16 other states that have a strong right to hunt, fish, and trap, harvest fish and wildlife. It isn't a problem in those other 16 states. This isn't something we're making up out of the air. I've done an awful lot of research over the years on this issue. I've been fighting ballot rights, animal rights ballot issues since the year 2000. So I've studied these different groups. You have a right to hunt, fish, and trap according to this bill, but it still goes back to that last line where it's according to the authority that is delegated to the designated public agencies or commission. So they've got authorities right now. This doesn't take away any of those authorities. And I also want to state that it seems to be working very well in the 16 other states that have this same language. And in addition to those 16 states, as we speak, they're carrying similar bills for the right to hunt fish and harvest wildlife or hunt fish or trap in Iowa right now and in Oregon, you know, in their legislative sessions, which are ongoing right now. Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, could I have one last quick follow-up?
Follow-up?
Thank you. Representative, I was just curious if you could tell the committee what type of education or experience you have in any wildlife management.
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, I've got a bachelor's degree in fisheries and a master's degree in wildlife. I worked as a wildlife biologist for 31 years, and that's been divided up between state agencies, federal agencies, and private industry. I was certified as a wildlife biologist by the Wildlife Society in 1982 based on education and experience. The Wildlife Society is the international professional organization of wildlife biologists. It's a pretty certification there is sort of like getting a CPA if you're an accountant. You have to meet some pretty strict guidelines. I published about a dozen papers in scientific journals and stuff. I've been a hunter, fisherman, and trapper since I was a kid. That's my background. That's why I'm here, and I'm in the legislature right now. I serve on the House Fish and Wildlife Committee. I was on that committee last session also, and the only reason I'm here is to try to protect my rights and sportsmen's rights to be able to hunt, fish, and trap.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative.
Representative France.
I have a couple of questions for the bill sponsor.
Representative.
Mr. Chair, Representative France.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fielder, it is your intent, though, in this bill to establish hunting and fishing and trapping as a constitutionally protected right, isn't it?
It's my intent to establish, Mr. Chair, Representative France, it's my intent to establish hunting, fishing, and trapping, including the use of current means and methods as a means of harvesting fish and wildlife.
And,
Mr. Chair.
And
follow up.
I have several questions here, but I'll check in with you. Mr. Chair, thank you. Are you aware that in Montana, constitutionally protected rights that are infringed on by statutes are given what's called a strict scrutiny test by the Montana courts?
Mr. Chair, Representative France, well, I am now.
Okay. Well, I was thinking, Representative Fielder, last session I brought a bill that would have required flagging near or adjacent to traps to alert dog owners that their dogs might be at risk because of snares or traps. The legislature turned that down, but it might pass. And I guess I'm wondering whether that would be a new method that would be barred, that this bill wouldn't cover because it speaks to current regulations, and whether that would be the kind of thing you would want this constitutional amendment to protect trappers against.
Mr. Chair, Representative France, I'm not sure I understand exactly what the question is. Are you saying that flagging would be a means and methods
If the legislature chose to require flagging around traps as a way of warning dog owners and hikers that there were traps in the area, would that be constitutional under, in your view, under your amendment?
Mr. Chair, Representative France, if flagging was required, if it went through the legislature and it was signed into law by the governor and it was enacted by the regulatory agency responsible for this, basically being the Fish, Wildlife, and Parks Commission, I don't know that flagging is a means. It is a good way to get people's traps stolen. One of the things that trappers are always fighting against is the people that come out and steal their traps. Even though there's a regulation that says it's illegal to tamper or disturb a person's trap other than by the trap owner or designated person that he's given permission to, trappers get a lot of traps stolen. And when you say, I want to flag traps where they are, flag traps or snares, then that's like putting a sign up and says, take me, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I appreciate we can argue the merits or demerits, but if the legislature passed it, would it be constitutional under, in your view, under your amendment?
Mr. Chair, Representative France, that's a tough one because I would hope the legislature would never pass something like that, Mr. Chair.
Follow up. If the legislature passed it, thinking it was constitutional, as we do with most of our bills, would it be possible for a trapper to sue the state over that new regulation under your constitutional amendment?
Mr. Chair, Mr. France, I'm not an attorney, and I don't know what would be possible for somebody to sue over something like that. I don't know that it would be considered a current means and methods of harvesting wildlife, which this bill is promoting. And when it says current means and methods, I assume I'm pretty sure that that means that when this bill is passed into law, when it goes to the 2024 voters and it's passed into law, it means current means and methods at the time it is passed into law. So unless you've got flagging on traps, and that's a needed method for harvesting wildlife, I don't think that would be affected by this. Mr. Chair.
Just a few different line of questioning, Mr. Chair.
One more.
I assume that you agree that the people of Montana should have the right to initiatives to change statutes and the right to petition to get signatures for a referendum to amend the Constitution?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative France, yes, I do.
And if we pass this... Follow up. And if we pass this and the voters approve it, voters 10 years down the road could bring another referendum to change it in another way. Would that be your view of how the Constitution works and is amended?
Mr. Chair, Representative France, yes, I do, because this was originally brought as an amendment to the Constitution in 2004 by the Montana Shooting Sports Association, and it's the Montana Shooting Sports Association that is using the constitutional parameters that we have in the Constitution to update and strengthen the Constitution. We're not doing something different. We're just working within the Constitution with the abilities that are provided within the Constitution to amend the Constitution. Mr. Chair.
Representative Deming, did you have questions?
I did. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got a question for either Mr. Medrano and or Mr. Harrison, if he's still around.
Mr. Medrano.
Earlier, Representative Deming, also happy to re-refer.
Okay. All right. I don't know if you'll have to. So In your testimony, you were worried about tribal treaties being affected by this. Mm-hmm. So maybe I don't understand it, but my understanding is that some of the treaties that you were worried about actually predate Montana. Mm-hmm. And so if treaties are the supreme law of the land, just about no matter what Montana does, those treaty rights would not be violated. Is that your understanding, or did I misunderstand what your point was? It's so long ago.
Definitely. Chair Lee, Representative Deming, so there's a few sprouts that come forth from your question, so I'll try to manage all of those. So when we're talking about treaty rights, we're generally looking at three core cases, or two generally core cases that focus on reservation hunting rights and then off reservation hunting rights. Now, as we know, treaties are supposed to be the supreme law of the land. Unfortunately, that's not always the case. There are a multitude of treaties which the federal government does not follow, and state governments also intervene. I'll also add that in our Constitution, there's what we have a disclaimer clause, which focuses on the jurisdiction of the state in Indian country, which actually the disclaimer clause is more expansive than what is currently the function. So actually, we've intervened as a state more so in Indian country than the disclaimer clause, which is in the Montana Constitution, which says that the state should not have jurisdictional control in the reservation. So that's just focusing on reservation. I think my concern roots from the fact that the good representative has considered a lot of interest in the whereas and has considered a lot of the interest of current means and methods, but yet hasn't set aside tribal rights which are existing. And so I think what happens here is that you then have a constitutional right, and then you have this treaty right, which are at odds with each other without clearly stating how those interface with each other. And so I go on the reservation, and this is something that happens. We see hunting and fishing on reservation that's illegal, and people asserting that they have rights on that, and then having to deal with that whole process. And then the last thing I'll mention, again, I'm sorry, this was such an expansive answer, we get to non-Indian fee land on reservations, and we have a bill that's on hold here this session, which focuses on the CSKT reservation of the Flathead, and again, I'll let Harrison speak on that if he has the opportunity. But then also last session in 2021, there was a bill to open that up on the other reservations. And so again, this is a contested battlefield, and I'm very wary of any constitutional amendment which is not attuned to that existing right.
You know, I think I'm good.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Jed Hinkle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess first for Ms. Honeycutt.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hinkle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Honeycutt, just simple yes or no. I can't remember from last session. Did the stock growers oppose this last session, this bill?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hinkle, I would have to go back and look, but to my knowledge, we did not.
Okay, thank you. And then, Mr. Chair, if I could ask the sponsor a question.
Representative.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hinkle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative. this is kind of going back to Representative France's question, and I think it was a little bit confusing, but or that the whole interchange there. But the way that I read the bill, and you can tell me if I'm correct or not, is that it says the citizens of Montana have the right to hunt, fish, trap, and harvest wild fish and wildlife, including the right to use current means and methods. So the current means and methods would be like a gun, a bow, a snare, a trap. It's a way of taking an animal. And in his example, when he was talking about flagging traps, flagging is not a means of taking a game animal or wildlife. Flagging has nothing to do with that. But based on the last sentence, it says this right is subject to necessary management statutes enacted by the legislature and regulatory authority delegated by the legislature. I would see if in the future the legislature passed a law that said you had to flag traps, that would not conflict with this should this pass into law. Because that would just be a law of the legislature. But it also wouldn't be protected by this because flagging is not a means to take wildlife. Am I correct in my assumption here?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hinkle, that would be my opinion. You know, there's a number of things you can do to traps which still allow you to trap. You can use offset jaws, you can use laminated jaws, you can use drags, you can use chains, you can use various types of traps. You know, some are body grip and some are foothold, you know, but it still comes down to the ability to use traps. How you want to modify those things is up to the individual trapper based on his experience and knowledge and the situation. When we talk about means and methods, we're talking about things like the use of traps, the use of dogs for hunting mountain lions, the use of, you know, being able to hunt bears. Those are means and methods, and that's what we're trying to guard against in this ballot initiative, Mr. Chair.
And one quick follow-up, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, Representative, so with that, you know, we have traps would be protected under this should this go and be signed into law, or I guess the people of Montana pass it into law. So guns, bows, traps, these things would be protected as a right. But let's just say the legislature in the future, after this passed, passed a law that allowed spearing of animals. Now, that would not be protected as a right because it was enacted after the passage because it wasn't a current means and methods. Am I correct in my assumption there?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hinkle, the way I would look at it is whatever on the books when this law is passed by the voters of Montana after the 2024 November election, those would be on the books and those would be protected. If the legislature passes additional laws, such as the use of other weapon types, and they're enacted by the legislature, then those enacted by the legislature and provided for through the Fish, Wildlife, and Parks Commission, those could be added to this. But we want to protect. Right now, the intent is to protect what we've got now, so that can't be taken away from us. So the idea is so we don't get our abilities to hunt, fish, and trap nickel and dimed away by you can't do this, you can't do that, until we get to the point where we're like Oregon or Washington or California, where we've got real wildlife problems. Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Further questions from the committee? Representative Deming. Or sorry, Representative Durham.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for Mr. Capra, please.
Chair, Representative Durham.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Capra, you mentioned in your initial testimony that you were concerned that this House Bill 372 would endanger the delisting of grizzly bears. Are you in favor of delisting grizzly bears?
I'm in favor of the state taking over management. That doesn't mean
Yes,
I am.
Thank you. And then the, Mr. Chair, follow-up. The second part of my question is, you were concerned that this right would protect a very small portion of Montanans. I think you mentioned 0.5% of the population. Am I following you correctly that you were not approval of this because it protected a small portion of our population?
Chair, Representative Durham, I think it's ridiculous that we're putting a constitutional amendment through to give the rights to less than 6,000 or 5,000 trappers in the state. And that's exactly what's occurring.
Mr. Chair, follow-up.
Follow-up.
Same concept, different topic, water rights. Are you aware of how many people have water rights within the state of Montana?
I am not.
Would you, Mr. Chair, follow-up?
Follow-up.
It's a small portion of the population that has water rights, in particular for in-stream flows.
Could I respond to that by Chair Representative Durham? The only response I can give that to you on that is simply that the people who have water rights are producing something for the state of Montana. Trappers are producing nothing for the state of Montana and contributing next to nothing to this state.
Thank you, Mr. Capra.
Further questions from the committee? Representative Kometz.
Mr. Chair, I just have a quick question for Ms. Honeycutt.
Ms. Honeycutt?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kometz.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Honeycutt, I live in eastern Montana, and I am not a rancher, but I've worked for ranchers my whole life.
almost every rancher's pickup has a scoped rifle in it with shells in the magazine, and they shoot every coyote they see 12 months out of the year. Many of them trap aggressively to limit the coyote population. I am just so curious, did you poll your members before you took this position?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kometz, yes. So any policies that we take positions are discussed by our executive committee who represent the regions within our state, and it was their decision to take a position on this bill.
Just one quick follow-up.
Ms.
Honeycutt, what was the results of that poll? Was 100% or...
Mr. Chair, Representative Kometz, the consensus from our executive committee was that there are too many unanswered questions and concerns related to unintended consequences for us to not raise those concerns related to this bill.
Thank you.
Thank you. I have a couple questions. We'll start with Mr. Capra.
Chair.
Mr. Capra, we can debate the efficacy of trapping till we're blue in the face. My question pertains to the statement you had just made that trappers don't produce anything for the state, and I take great offense to that because as a livestock owner myself, I feel that I produce quite a little for the state, and I trap, and I believe this bill will enshrine my right to keep making a profit and to keep making a living in the state. And your position is that you want to do that. So my question to you is, are you a proponent of taking away farmers and ranchers' right to make a living if we can no longer control the population of predators that are out to take away our living?
Chair, fair question. Obviously, I'm not opposed to what you're doing. I have a problem with the idea of trapping because I don't think it solves the problem you're directly trying to achieve. If the idea is that you're going to trap every coyote that comes by, then you're going to have more coyotes. We know what science tells us, and that's not a way to solve the problem you're having. And if we look at how other countries deal with this, I mean, Italy is three-quarters of the size of Montana. They have 3,000 wolves, and they don't hunt or trap them. The animals are self-regulating.
Thank you. I disagree with that statement wholeheartedly, but I will take your answer. My next question would be for Mr. Bollinger.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Bollinger, in a statement made earlier that by a couple opponents, that hunting and trapping of these predators have taken... That, how do I explain this? The big game that we are hunting and trapping is now creating more more coyotes and more of these smaller predator game. In your position as an outfitter, have is that statement true, I guess?
Mr. Chairman, I could not follow that statement at all. I was trying to comprehend what was trying to be transmitted by the witness or the person making that statement, so I can't really help you with that one.
Thank you. Any further questions from the committee? Representative Smith.
Mr. Chair, I have a question probably for the sponsor.
Representative.
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith.
So I think about all the entities that this bill may have intended or unintended consequences for. And so I'm curious, have you, in formulating this bill, have you worked with timber, oil, gas, coal to make sure that it doesn't impact our, essentially our abilities to invest and look at our natural resources? Have you worked with them in creating the bill?
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, I've worked with a lot of agencies over the years on this type of bill. I've worked with agencies, organizations, I will say. That's never been come up as a problem. These other organizations having to do with oil and gas leases or forestry management or anything like that, it's never come up before at all. And like I said, I started working on against animal rights ballot initiatives in the year 2000. I've studied other states. I've made it basically a science to myself. You know, as a professional wildlife biologist, I see what the other states are doing, how they're doing it, and that has never come in as an issue. How it affects other things. I was kind of surprised that the stock growers came in against this today for the reasons that they stated. In 2016, when we had that ballot initiative 177, I was the chairman of the five-person committee that wrote the position statement against that anti-trapping ballot initiative for the voters pamphlet. And one of the other members on that committee was the representative from the Montana Stockmen's Association. I think his name started with a J, but I can't say the whole name here. So he worked with us to work against that ballot initiative that would have banned trapping on public lands. So the Stock Growers Association was very much in favor of it at that point. And I was surprised that they would come in against it because they're one of the main beneficiaries of predator control on their livestock. Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
So when you were writing this bill, you didn't talk to oil, gas, timber, or coal?
Mr. Chair, I did not talk to those entities. I didn't talk to airlines. I didn't talk to a lot of people that have never been involved in this issue before. Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Representative Jed Hinkle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick clarification from Ms. Honeycutt.
Ms. Honeycutt.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hinkle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Honeycutt, just a clarification on Representative Kometz's questions. You did not poll your membership of the Stock Growers Association to come to the position that you came to, but rather your executive board came to the position that they have come to on this bill. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hinkle, our organization is a member-driven organization that has policy development two times a year. From those meetings, policy is developed, and then from that, our executive board makes decisions based off the policy from our membership.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions from the committee? Representative Mitchell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one question for Mr. Capra.
Mr. Chair, Capra. Representative Mitchell.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Capra, so you say that you're against this bill because a small portion of Montanans will potentially utilize it. So if we gave teachers a raise in the state, which is a small portion of the state, or we gave a tax credit to anybody who buys an electric vehicle in the state, which is a small portion of the state, are you saying that we shouldn't legislate bills if it only is benefiting a certain portion of the state or is utilized by a certain portion of the state?
Representative Mitchell, when's the last time you passed legislation to support 5,000 people? You're not talking about a small portion. There's far more teachers. There's far more people buying electric cars. There's not that many people that contribute nothing to our state in terms of revenue from the activity that they get to use on our public lands.
Seeing no further questions from the committee, Representative, would you like to close on your bill?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I apologize for the length of this hearing, but obviously it's a passionate issue to people, both our proponents and opponents. This issue should not be a partisan bill. There are members of both parties that hunt, fish, and trap, but it is a partisan bill. I said I've got 97 co-sponsors on this bill. They're all from one party. It should not be a partisan bill, but somehow it is. Now, there's been talk about influence from other states. Sportsmen stick together. When there's been ballot initiative in other states, we've tried to help other states protect their rights also. And that's what we're trying to do here. I'm The NRA came in as a proponent of this, but they talked about traditional means and methods rather than current means and methods. And as this bill has worked through the legislative process over the years, traditional versus current means and methods was often a topic. And it was decided most recently, in the last session, that current means and methods was a better term. Because traditional means and methods of managing wildlife used to include poisons, which we don't want to use anymore. It also included running herds of animals over a cliff. You know, so there's a lot of traditional means and methods that we don't do anymore. We want to use what's current means and methods that have been thoroughly vetted by the legislature and or the Fish, Wildlife, and Parks Department and Commission. So what we've got on the books, it seems to be working now. We want to just keep on the books. There's been talk about this bill deals with a very small fragment of the population, trappers. Now, there's been about, it varies year to year, between 5,000 and 6,000 trappers licenses that are sold in Montana. Most of the trapping I've done in my recent history has been to do animal damage control, where ranchers and farmers ask me to come in and control animals that are causing them agricultural harm or harming their property values. So trappers are providing a service, whether it's to livestock owners or to people that own property along rivers that the beavers are cutting down all their landscape stuff. Trappers provide a service. Now, there's a lot less dentists in Montana than there are trappers, but it's kind of handy to have one around when you need one. So we heard the term unintended consequences 9 times so far. As a legislator, whenever I hear the term unintended consequences, my ears perk up because that means I just don't like this and I don't have any other reason other than it could cause unintended consequences. So if there's unintended consequences, let's hear what they are. My ears always perk up at that, but I noticed it was 9 times in this hearing. We've heard from the sponsor of the present Harvest Heritage Clause that was passed in 2004 and added to the Constitution that we have now. The sponsor of that from the Montana Shooting Sports Association said that that bill needs to be strengthened, and this bill does that. So we're using the legislative process and the constitutional process to strengthen the bill that the sponsor says needs. The existing sponsor of our present Harvest Heritage Clause says needs strengthening. This says that also that the we'll use current means and methods by the citizens for hunting, fishing, and trapping as the primary means, but not the exclusive means for managing wildlife. Several years ago in Sanders County, where I live, in Noxon Reservoir, the Department of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks was going out, and they didn't want walleye in the Noxon Reservoir, although they had a pretty good walleye population there. So they were going out, and they were spawning and killing walleye on their spawning grounds. They were killing the same fish that sportsmen were buying fishing licenses for to fish at Noxon Reservoir. So as part of the Citizens Advisory Council at that time for Region 1, I went there and we were able to have them increase fishing limits, reduce size, increase the season so they were more lax. So we were able to use sportsmen, fishermen, to reduce the walleye population rather than having government agencies going out and doing what sportsmen could do. What we want to do is we don't want wildlife services out there reducing the wildlife populations where they're needed. We don't want the Department of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks doing it. We want to allow sportsmen that buy hunting and fishing licenses and trapping licenses to do that where possible. And if that's not possible, then we go to other opportunities to do that. There's also sometimes when people, opponents to this, will say that this is not based on science. We shouldn't be having the legislature dictate what we should be doing. What we're doing is follows the guidelines of the Wildlife Society. And I mentioned that's the International Organization of Professional Wildlife Biologists. They have a policy statement specifically for trapping that says that regulated trapping is an effective means of managing wildlife populations and providing outdoor recreation and heritage opportunities for citizens. So I could talk an awful lot on this, but we've already had a lot of talk on this. So if there's no more questions, I'll just ask you to please pass this on to the voters. We've heard that this is very unpopular with the public, although they've shot down Initiative 177 by quite a large margin in this state. So this simply lets it go through the legislature so the voters can decide if they want to protect their right to hunt, fish, and trap. Mr. Chair.
This closes the hearing on House Bill 372. Is there anything for the good of the order of the committee? If not, House Judiciary is adjourned.